Good afternoon, colleagues. I hope you enjoyed your summer break. It gives me enormous pleasure to ask the Right Reverend Stephen Conway, Bishop of Ely, to lead us in prayers this afternoon.
Thank you. Let us pray. I invite us first to, in a moment of quiet, to honour one another as we ask for strength and guidance as members, both representing particular communities and particular points of view. We pray for the united work of this county and its council, for mutual regard in the service of all the citizens of this county. Lord God, whose blessed Son, Jesus Christ, has shown us that the secret of happiness is a heart free from selfish desires, help us to look not only on our own care, but also to the needs of others, and inspire in us such fair dealing and fellow feeling as may reveal our shared humanity. Through the same Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen. At this time, as we look beyond our own needs, we remember the people of Mosul and all those living under any oppressive regime or facing violence or being refugees in their own land. And as we note the difficulties others face, we give thanks for the blessings of this county and our common life. Give us a vision for this county with compassion at its heart, a county where the weak are protected and no one goes hungry, a county where benefits are shared so that all may enjoy them, a county where all peoples live in mutual respect, desiring the flourishing of the stranger, a county where peace is built from justice. And give us the courage to renew this county in these days. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members. Members, I have some apologies for this afternoon. I have apologies from Councillors Clapp, Frost, Butcher, Harty, Lay, Topping, Maguire, and possibly Councillor Chapman. Any other apologies? Thank you very much. The first item on this afternoon's agenda is the approval of the minutes of the meeting of the Council held on the 19th of July 2016. The Council is asked to agree these as a correct record. Do you agree these as a correct record? Thank you very much. I have a number of announcements to make today. First of all, I would like to welcome members of the public to this meeting of Council. You are very welcome, and I hope that you find this meeting of interest. Cambridge County Council supports the principle of transparency and encourages filming, recording, and taking photographs at its meetings that are open to the public. Members are advised that this meeting may therefore be filmed, recorded, or photographed. The meeting is being live-streamed to the web and to the County Council's YouTube channel. I would like to highlight this to members of the public that they may be filmed as part of this meeting and that this will appear on the web. Please, can I ask all members and members of the public to turn their mobile phones to silent or vibrate whilst the meeting is taking place. It is with enormous sadness that I report the death of Heidi Chalkley, social worker in Huntingdonshire in CIN Unit 12. Heidi had completed her training to be a social worker last year and was just about to complete her assessed and supported year of employment, of which she was due to pass with flying colours. and was working within children's social care. She was a great social worker with a lot of potential, who was highly professional and passionate about her job and the families that she worked with. She had a bubbly personality which made her a pleasure to work with, and she was very highly thought of. She will be sadly missed by her team and all that knew her, as well as by the children and the families that she worked with. The council's thoughts are with her family, friends and colleagues at this very sad time. May I ask council, please, to stand in memory of Heidi. Thank you, members. Members will be aware that Adrian Lodes, the Council's Executive Director, Children, Families and Adults, left the Council on the 16th of September to become Corporate Director of People at the London Borough of Redbridge. Adrian has been with the Council for 15 years and has achieved a considerable amount in one of the most challenging areas of any Council's work. On behalf of the Council, I would like to thank Adrian for his contribution to the work of the Council over the past 15 years and to wish him all the very best for his future career. And I'm sure members would accompany me that in those best wishes. Thank you. I was very pleased to be invited and very grateful by our monitoring officer to open the new offices of LGSS Law at Huntingdon on Friday, where I had the opportunity to learn a great deal more about LGSS than I knew beforehand. And I'm sure that I share with all members a wish for their very great success in the future. I was honoured to welcome the Duke of Gloucester to Cambridge recently on behalf of Cambridgeshire County Council. On Friday, 23rd of September 2016, His Royal Highness officially opened Trumpington Community College, Cambridge. During the day, His Royal Highness also formally opened Cowan Court at Churchill College, the newly rebuilt Nuffield Health Cambridge Hospital, and met with members of the Shrievalty Trust at Camborne Police Station. That concludes my announcements. We now move on to declarations of interests. Under this item, members are asked to declare interests under the Code of Conduct in any item on the agenda for today's meeting if they are not registered on the Register of Interest. May I have any such declarations now, please? Good. Thank you. Oh. Councillor Taylor.
Thank you. I'd just like to declare an interest in item E, as I have a child at a Cambridge Secondary School. It's a personal interest, but not prejudicial.
Sorry, what item was it?
E.
Oh, I'm sorry, the motions. Okay. Right, thank you. I'm not sure that's entirely necessary, but, you know, let's dot the I's, cross the T's. Anybody else? Good. Moving right along to public question time. This allows members of the public to ask questions at the council meeting, provided they've given advance notice. No questions were notified, so we move on to petitions, which allows members of the public to present petitions in accordance with the protocol. No petitions were received. We move on to item number six, which is two items in front of us for determination. The first item relates to the medium-term financial strategy, which was discussed by General Purposes Committee on the 26th of July. Can I ask the Chairman of the General Purposes Committee, Councillor Count, to move the recommendation as set out on the Council agenda?
Thank you, Chairman. Happy to move as set out on the Council agenda.
Thank you. Do you have a seconder?
Yes, Chairman. I second and reserve my right to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Count.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Rather than take up this council's time with a lengthy opening report, this was available at GPC. The public were there, as well as ourselves. It was all contained in the documents. The only clarification I wish to add is the ambiguity in the recommendation at the bottom of the first page, where it says the word weather, and I can confirm that weather was resolved at committee, and what is in front of you today is what was actually confirmed. Apart from that, I'd rather ask questions than take up any valuable time.
Thank you. You have preempted, in fact, the notes for part B relating to the capital strategy. Never mind. It makes everything just that much speedier. Have I any questions or comments? Councillor Mason.
Thank you, Chairman. Are we actually commenting on B? You've just referred to it.
To what?
To the capital strategy.
No, we're just dealing with the medium-term financial strategy for the moment, and we'll come on to the capital strategy in about 30 seconds, if nobody has anything else to say. Councillor Cairns.
I'm disappointed that this has come forward. Members of my group spoke against this at GPC because it is basing an assumption that we will be looking to take the social care preset, but not to increase council tax. And I noted at that time, and I note again, that there's been an extensive public consultation, which I and other members helped to facilitate. And certainly when I facilitated the public consultation in the Market Square in Cambridge, we had a series of the jars for ping pong balls of the different options, and all day long the jar for we will do both had to be kept being emptied and replenished so that it could be filled again. And that was, we were specifically asking people where they came from, and these were not just people from Cambridge. And I would suggest that is because people of Cambridgeshire have felt the cuts of last year, have seen the error that we made by making cuts which we need to transform this council and the services we deliver, and they have felt the damage that has been inflicted by the approach that this council took last year, and therefore I cannot support the medium-term financial strategy in its current form.
Thank you, Councillor Cairns. Any other comments? Councillor Jenkins. Councillor Walsh.
Yeah,
through the chair, if you'd be so kind.
I'd just like to agree with that, but I'd also like to make the point which I made in the Environment and Economy meeting last week, that this council is very economic with the truth when it comes to its financial planning. And it puts together budget papers and planning papers going forward, but never bothers to include in them what the important assumptions are. And the assumption on increasing council tax, I think, is one of the fundamentally most important things, and it should go there so that the public knows what the basis is for making these decisions is. So can we have less economy with the truth and a little bit more openness with respect to what our assumptions are going forward, please?
Thank you. I have no other speakers. Councillor Hickford. Oh, I'm sorry. Councillor Bullen. If everybody
Thank you,
could
Chairman.
Wave their hands more enthusiastically. Then.
I will indeed, Chairman, sorry. Just a quick point of clarity. I too went out with officers with the jars of ping pong balls. And in my hometown of St Ives, it was the opposite. The majority put in the ball saying they wanted no further council tax increases. However, what I'd like to point out is that is for another day when we discuss the budget.
Indeed. Councillor Dr Van Der Ven.
I guess the basis is that we're consulting the public and asking, putting out a number of options, and to preclude any of those options in our modelling doesn't really make sense. So I think that was the spirit of what Councillor Cairns was saying. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hickford?
Nothing to add, Chairman.
Councillor Count, would you like to complete the debate?
Yes, I'm trying to help with some of these conceptions or misconceptions or where I can with questions of detail, Chairman. So the purpose of this strategy is actually to lay down what we use for our business planning process. So it's not a decision to adhere to a 2% adult social care precept, nor is it a decision to go to 0% or 4% with the combination of two. It is simply laying out a groundwork for how we make our decision-making processes going forward. All along that route, through our committees, through the council, we have various suggestions saying if we went up to 4% or if we went down to zero, this would be the net effect. Now, as Councillor van der Ven quite rightly points out, there is a point in our cycle in the year when we go out for public consultation where we say our business plan, this is the result of that, and it's based on the 2% adult social care precept. If you were to go for zero or for four or something in between, this is the range of differences it might make. We also have Budget Day, where the various political groups and independent people think what they would like to put forward. And that is the day that we make the decision about whether it should be zero or four. We have to use something for business planning processes. And it's absolutely right that we use the results of last year, which included a five-year table, to take forward for this year's work. So I failed to see that the importance or relevance of that conversation. I would back up both Councillor Bullen's and Councillor Kern's point that if you have your ping-pong balls in certain parts of the county, you will get different results. And I have no doubt that in Cambridge, if you are fortunate enough to have visitors from the North County, from Fenland, those that could either afford the fuel for a 30-mile journey or an £11 return train ticket or the car park in Cambridge City, that they might be more closely aligned financially to those people in Cambridge City than the people up in Wisbeach that have no transport that will never actually go there for a day out visiting, or very unlikely. So there will be different results and different reviews from around the county. I'm disappointed that this chamber is being used to describe the impact on the people of Cambridge City in particular based on last year's decision of taking the 2% council tax, because the only other proposition to raise it to 4% was to put that money into general reserves. Now, if we had to put that money into general reserves, there isn't an individual in Cambridgeshire that would have noticed a difference in last year over that very point. So that is wholly incorrect, and I resent that. I think I've covered most of it all. The assumptions for the financial strategy, they are assumptions, they are for us to move forward with. At the end of the year, we will have the consultation and we will have the business planning process, the budget on the day in February, and that is the time for the right decisions, whichever way they may lie. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Count. We shall now take a vote on this item. Mrs. Rowe, if you could instruct us, please.
Would members please press the button mark present? Members in favour of the motion, please press the button mark yes. Members against the motion, please press the button mark no. Members wishing to abstain, please press the button mark abstain. I'm now closing the vote. Chairman, the result of the vote is 46 votes in favour, 14 against and 1 abstention. The motion is therefore carried.
Thank you, Mrs. Rowe. We now move on to item 6B, which relates to the capital strategy discussed by General Purposes Committee on the 26th of July. Can I ask the Chairman of the General Purposes Committee, Councillor Count, to move the recommendation as set out in the Council agenda, and you have already corrected the slight alteration at recommendation B, which involves replacing weather with that.
I do so move. Thank you, Chairman.
Councillor Hickford.
I so second, Chairman, and reserve my right to speak.
Thank you very much. Now, Councillor Mason, your moment has come. Councillor Mason, I'd rather you stood, you sat, if that's all right.
Yes.
I will not be offended.
Thank you, Chairman. On this part of the capital strategy, I am against the general trend of B and C. I have always been in favour of trying to reduce the levels of borrowing, and the wording of the motion, which did in fact it is confusing, but now that we've got weather replaced by that, the answer to that question, as far as I'm concerned, is no. and I've gone through the reasons for that in previous council meetings. On C, that borrowing related to invest in save and earn schemes should continue to be excluded from the advisory debt charges limit. Now, this actually reflects what Councillor Jenkins has said. This is a way of actually hiding the debt charges with regard to save to earn schemes. I would much rather see that save to earn schemes be actually financed from the capital value of those schemes, and that any risk taken, particularly in view of things like obtaining planning permission for development, should actually be reflected on the property value rather than put in as a risk, which it is, to council taxpayers in terms of borrowing. So I'm not in favour of B and C, and will therefore not vote for this.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Councillor Hickford?
Nothing to add, Chairman. I know that the Chair of GPC has got this one in hand.
Councillor Count.
Thank you, Chairman. So I understand the points that Councillor Mason is making. So the first one is that when we approve the business plan, we have a prediction on where our debt charges will be at a certain level. Now, what we actually ask is that the level that we approve debt charges at to be a little bit higher. And the difference between the two does go through the GPC committee, and we have agreed it today. And it's been the same thing that we've done for years. Now, the reason for that is quite simple. There could be many changes in a year. There might be a project that comes up in the middle of the year for some reason we feel it's absolutely necessary to deal with. On the other hand, it might be changing interest rates that are unexpected at a time when we have some reborrowing requirements that again may affect that. So it does have a little bit, just a little bit of headroom, which is the reason for the B. Now, if we need to go to that headroom, or if we have any new savings requirements, they do go through the committee process, so they will be scrutinised fully before anything is accepted. So that is the reason for having B, which is the same as quite a few years. The reason for C, which is whether or not to exclude save to invest schemes from our potential borrowing requirements. This was something I suggested through the committee system a number of years ago, or perhaps through the cabinet system in the past. The reason being that we have to borrow to build things like schools. We have no option about that. We have a duty to build a school, and therefore we have to have the repayment charges on them out of our revenue account, which affects the services that we deliver. So it's right and proper that we should keep an absolute eye on what we're building on one hand to deliver services to the community against the charges that we have to lay against them. However, there are optional building projects that we come across that we've taken on in recent years to make us more commercially minded. One would be the energy park at Soham. Another one would be house building that Councillor Mason has referred to. Now, those, what we have is a proposal that if we invest some upfront money, they will deliver revenue savings in the medium longer term. The risk is to the council and the benefits are to the council, so they are quite closely matched in that, and the fact that the risk taker and the beneficiary are one and the same person. However, again, I must stress that in order for something to qualify for that, it must go through a very rigorous process through officers, through committees, in order to be accepted. Now, if we didn't allow that to be in a separate pot, but we actually did say that we will not allow them to be excluded, then we could make a proposal for something like the Energy Park at Soham, which delivers a revenue saving for the council that actually gets built and actually manages us to maintain services, that if we hadn't have done it, we would have to reduce services because we reached a cap because we weren't able to invest in something that made a surplus. So that is the reasoning for that, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Count. Right, we have had dissent expressed, so we shall move to a vote on this item. Mrs. Rowe, if you'd be kind, please.
Would members please press the button marked present? Members in favour of the motion, please press the button marked yes. Members against the motion, please press the button marked no. Members wishing to abstain, please press the button marked abstain. I'm now closing the vote. Chairman, the result of the vote is 58 votes in favour, 1 against and 2 abstentions. The motion is therefore carried.
Thank you, Mrs. Rowe. Agenda item number 7 is a recommendation to full council from the Staffing and Appeals Committee regarding the appointment of a Deputy Chief Executive and an Interim Executive Director for Children, Families and Adults. Can I ask the Chairman of the Staffing and Appeals Committee, Councillor Schumann, to move that the recommendation as set out in the report at page 9 be adopted, and the Vice Chairman of Staffing and Appeals Committee, Councillor Adrian Dent, to second. Councillor Schumann.
Happy to move, Chairman, propose.
Thank you very much. Councillor Dent.
Chairman, I so second and reserve my right to speak.
Thank you. Any debate? Are you happy to accept this by acclamation, members? Thank you very much. We move on to agenda item 8, recommendations to full council from the Constitution and Ethics Committee. Report is on pages 13 to 18 on the Joint Development Control Committee, Norstow. Can I ask the Chairwoman of the Constitution and Ethics Committee, Councillor Mandy Smith, to move that the recommendations as set out in the report be adopted, and the Vice-Chairwoman of Constitution and Ethics, Councillor Scutt, to second.
I am happy to move the recommendation, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Scutt?
Yes, I second the recommendation.
Thank you. Have I any speakers? Councillor Cairns.
I note the point in the recommendation that we look at the need for governance arrangements for the growth agenda at the strategic point. Well, I would make the point we are at that strategic point. There are developers champing at the bit to put in major applications to significant developments for new communities, and I have asked, with the support of the chair of E&E, I've asked Graham Hughes, as a matter of urgency, to follow this up with South Cambridgeshire so that we can have sufficient governance for the planning of these new communities. And on that basis, I will support this, but I would like that to be on record.
Thank you. Councillor Mason.
Yes, Chairman. I just want to comment on, basically, it's paragraph 2.2 on the report. One of the things that does concern me about this, and we've spoken about this in council before, is there any arrangement with regard to continuing to pursue the Section 106 agreements that are in favour of this council's infrastructure with regard to Norstow, bearing in mind that the development is now about 12 years late and we are still owed a great deal of money in terms of infrastructure. And so if this committee is wound up, can I have an assurance that that the infrastructure benefits that accrue as a result of Phase 1 and will now accrue as a result of Phase 2 will be pursued, and that we don't get into the trap of going for a number of buildings occupied, because that has actually lost this council a great deal of money, which has had to be made up by the taxpayer. So the Norstow development is still slow. We are still getting we're getting houses built now. Let us please ensure that the council receives its Section 106 contributions due as soon as they fall due.
Thank you, Councillor Mason. I think this doesn't go to the heart of what we're asked to discuss today, but Councillor Bates has indicated that he's in a position to give a short response.
Thank you, and thank you. Can I give the member that reassurance that we will continue those discussions with South Cairns about the Section 106, and we'll continue to work with South Cairns and for the benefit of what will be a new community to make sure that we receive adequate provision through the Section 106 agreements.
Thank you. Councillor Scutt, you reserved your right to speak. Do you wish to say anything?
No, I don't think it's necessary.
Thank you very much. Vice Chairman?
No, there's nothing to say.
In which case, as I haven't heard a dissenting voice, are you happy to agree this by acclamation? Thank you. We'll move on to item 9, the Audit and Accounts Committee annual report included at pages 19 to 26. Can I ask Councillor Mike Shellens to move receipt of the report? Councillor Shellens.
Thank you, Chair. Members, you will all have received a copy of this fascinating report, and having experienced these before, I remain confident that you will all have eagerly devoured it in its entirety. I therefore have no need to provide you with a resume, but will happily take questions at the end of these few brief words. If any of you is unwise enough to want me to explain either assets under construction or lender option, buyer option issues, then I strongly recommend this be done outside the meeting to save the rest of you from extreme boredom and confusion. I want to express my deep gratitude to all members of the Finance and Internal Audit teams and the other officers involved in our work for this year. I'm also extremely grateful to members of the committee for their participation, but more particularly in the way in which we have all worked together for the common good. The apocryphal little green man from Mars, why is it always a man from Mars, would have been...
Members, please carry on, Councillor Shallons.
Would have been quite unable to identify who was a member of which party, and that is as it should be. Finally, I must thank Rob Sanderson, who carried out his unenviable task of trying to keep me in order with steady good humour in the face of multiple provocations from me. There are, however, two areas that I wish to draw to your attention. The first relates to the audit process, which involves frightfully clever external auditors carrying out a detailed examination of our books. Their report comes to our committee. The challenges of all previous audits pale into insignificance compared to the difficulties experienced by Cambridgeshire in finalising the 15-16 accounts. Long ago, there was an agreed schedule for everything to be resolved by our September the 20th meeting. With a sign-off in accordance with a statutory, I repeat, statutory, deadline of September the 30th this year. I finally signed last Friday, October the 14th. Following September the 20th, we had further abortive meetings and multiple reissues of final reports from the auditors. There were more requests for information as late as last week, remember, statutory deadline 2 weeks earlier. Even last Friday's sign-off was not on the basis of a finalised document, but contained or was in, had involved multiple verbal updates to bemused committee members. The auditors were simply always running late behind the agreed schedules. The auditors, appointed by government, not by us, at a cost of over £90,000 a year, were new to us this year. Frankly, they have been awful. Our 151 officer told her he had never experienced anything like this in his whole career, though he is, of course, still very young. You will want to know that Chris and I have called for a meeting with senior management of BDO, the firm in question. This must not happen again. Finally, as this could be my swan song report to you, I feel I must put before you a concern coming out of our work on the corporate risk register. You've all seen these huge documents. In summary, the register comments on the risks to the council involved in what we are proposing to do. You will have seen similar documents in your individual committees. What is completely missing, as far as I can see, is monitoring the impact of the risks to our residents from our decisions to stop doing things. The provision to those we still serve may well be assessed as good quality, but what about those who will not receive our services, the frail, the lonely, the person who cannot get out of their village? These risks are both personal and financial, i.e. they impact on the quality of life of those not getting the services, and they could well have future financial consequences on the public purse somewhere. Three people I happen to know each ended up in A&E after falls while lighting was dimmed to save money. You'll know of other such instances in your divisions. Children at risk who are not provided with appropriate support from early years services will have fewer life chances. Research shows that by the time they reach adulthood, they will have cost the public purse seven times the so-called savings. You will have other instances that you could recall. I would like to suggest that this council monitors a societal impact assessment of cuts. We should acknowledge that there are things that we shall have to choose not to do. No shame in that. Others have cut our income. But we should be honest and transparent about the impact on the lives of our residents of decisions we are being forced to make. We should record the so-called savings made, the number of people impacted, and then the effectiveness of the mitigation measures, just as in the risk register. If libraries can be run by volunteers, that reduces the impact. It might be classed as a green. If, thanks to the efforts of Steve Criswell and Peter Downs and others, volunteers can absorb some of the loss, let us record that. Street signs may well be washed, paths gritted, hedging obscuring road signs cut back. But we can't empty gullies, so perhaps an orange. and there will be some terrible reds about which we can do little or nothing, but we should be honest about the fact that they are there. We need to find another £123 million worth of savings over 5 years. I shudder to think of the personal and financial pain those cuts will inflict on the vulnerable of Cambridgeshire, whom, fundamentally, we exist here to protect. Let us not pretend that we're doing frightfully well by eliminating recognition of the negative. Clearly, the best
Councillor Shellens, you are coming to the end. I hope you have a red light.
Clearly, the best way to minimise the negative effects is to maximise our income and so reduce the cuts in the first place. But that is a discussion for another day.
Chair. Thank you. Councillor Sales. Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Chair. I wasn't sure if I was on or not. If I might, through you, address some questions to Councillor Shellens. So I'd like to talk about the Cambridge Central Library Enterprise Centre, part of the committee's work on page 21, and say that I very much appreciate the way in which Councillor Shellens and his committee undertook that review, because I know that it was very exhaustive. It was something that was felt to be very necessary by the whole council. Considerable amount of evidence was received and various recommendations made. But I am a bit disappointed to see that the delivery of the actions is still underway a year since we discussed the matter in council. And I wonder if Councillor Shellens could tell us what actions have been taken and which ones are still outstanding, please. Either now, if that's possible, or perhaps later. It would be interesting to see what the progress is.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. You don't feel that this is covered by the report, which says that the next update is planned for January 17?
I don't.
Okay. Well, Councillor Shellens, I'll ask you to respond at the end, if I may. Councillor Mason.
Chairman, at the risk of upsetting Councillor Shellens, I am going to just make brief reference with a question on 263. I'm not going to refer to assets under construction, but I am going to refer to assets generally because in the past their comments have been made by the auditors that the council does not have a complete register of assets. Now, I have raised this matter in correspondence with the Chief Finance Officer, and Councillor Shellens has been copied in. So my question is going to be, basically, is his committee now in progress in completing the asset register, and also the other point mentioned in a previous audit report, that the registration of all council property is now complete. I wonder whether he would like to comment on that, and also I would ask that he gives me a reply from a financial point of view to the points that I have raised.
Thank you, Councillor Mason. I'm sure Councillor Shellens will respond in due course. Councillor Bullen.
Thank you, Chairman. It's already been touched on. First of all, I'd like to commend Councillor Shellens and his committee for the work they've done in the last year. I think we'll all agree they've done a very difficult job very well. However, I do have concerns, and Councillor Shellens says, at the signing off of the accounts at the 11th of hour, and I do not believe that they have actually been properly signed off. It is a statutory duty, there is a time limit, and we missed it, and yet we seem to have done nothing about it. And indeed, this is also the same case with the LGSS accounts. I think we need to look at this very carefully for the future, find out why the accounts are so late, what the problem was with them, and ideally, this council needs to see the signed-off accounts far earlier than it did this time, so that we can properly analyse them and have questions to bring forward to council. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other points or questions from members? I will invite Councillor Shellens to respond, if you may, please.
I have to say, Chairman, I'm extremely disappointed. In previous years, I've got away with no questions.
It's your swan song.
It's my swan song, right. Mm. Councillor Taylor wanted information about the CLEC report. We have been receiving on a regular basis a lengthy report dealing with every recommendation that has come out of that report, which has been in a novel fashion been allocated either a smiley face or a not very smiley face. And I will be very happy to make available to Councillor Taylor and anybody else who wants it the full, what we call, smiley face report on all the recommendations and the progress coming out of the CLEC report. Councillor Mason said he was not happy that we did not have a formal asset register. My understanding is that there are different ways of skinning that particular cat, and I was convinced in discussions with the Finance Department that we were at no risk in terms of not having the report in the form that the auditors preferred. We do have a document that gives us all the information that we need, but work is, I believe, continuing on producing some things that will make the auditors happier next year. Councillor Bullen said, and is all land registered? I don't know, but I believe it. I will find out and come back to you, Councillor, at the end of the meeting. In terms of signing off, I'm tempted to use unparliamentary language as to the what we feel about the process this year. As I tried to say in my words, there was a schedule. It was drawn up in advance. The particular firm, BDO, knew that they were taking over our audit. They knew that 6 months before they did. There was a schedule. They came to us with an A4 which said this is what we'll do when, and they didn't do it. There was considerable, as angry as I've seen in a member and officer meeting by people from Cambridgeshire, the frustration of not getting to know when we were going to have the system signed off. I made a phone call at 4:45 on a day before a meeting to find out from BDO whether or not we had to cancel yet another meeting. It is, in my view, and I'm not professional in this, but in my view, it was unprofessional performance. I put it all down to them. I do not ascribe any of the issue to our officers. There is to be a meeting with BDO senior management. That was discussed today, and what we are going to do is go through the items where we believe they failed. Putting somebody up who had to be trained in what we do and then sending them off to the Falklands 2 weeks later. I mean, that's just unprofessional, and it meant we had to start again. So there are all sorts of things that we're very, very unhappy about, and we will be asking them for a detailed schedule, and we will be monitoring progress against that schedule in very tight order next year, and making sure that if there is any indication of slippage, because they under-resourced us, if there is any indication of slippage, we will be going in at director level rather than messing around at a lower level. I hope that gives you the assurances you wanted.
Thank you, Councillor Shellens. Next is agenda item number 10, the Pension Fund Committee Annual Report, included on the agenda, pages 27 to 33. Could I ask Councillor Count, former chairman of the Pension Fund Committee, to move receipt of the report? Councillor Count.
Yes, happy to move the receipt of the report, Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions? Any comment? Any debate? Good. We move right along, in which case, to item 11, which is the Local Pension Fund Board Annual Report, included in the Council Agenda, pages 34 to 56. Could I ask Councillor Netzinger, who is standing in for Councillor Maguire, to move receipt of the report?
I move receipt of the report.
Thank you. Questions, comments, or debate? Good. Thank you very much. Next, item 12. Allocation of seats and substitutes to political groups in accordance with the political balance rules. I am proposing from the Chair the allocation of seats and substitutes on committees to groups in accordance with the political balance rules as set out on pages 57 to 63 be approved, and I will ask the Vice-Chairwoman to second.
Happy to second.
Any comment? Thank you very much, members. 13. The appointment of the chairman or chairwoman of the Adults Committee. I propose, as chairman of the council, to move the change in chairmanship proposed for the Adults Committee, and will ask the vice chairwoman to second.
Happy to second.
Thank you. It's Councillor Dent. Small smile. any comment? No? Jolly good. Moving right along to appointments to outside organisations. I propose, as chairman, to move the change in membership proposed for the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough Fire Authority, and ask the Vice-Chairwoman to second.
Happy to second.
Any comment? No? Jolly good. Thank you. So far, so good, members. The next item is written motions. Five motions have been submitted. The first motion has been submitted by Councillor Connor. Can I ask Councillor Connor to move and speak to his motion as set out on page 3 of the Council agenda?
Anyway, in my 3.5 years serving my constituents in the 40-foot division, which includes Doddington as a county councillor and indeed as a Fenland councillor, I've heard numerous times from all political parties in this chamber that Fenland and parts of Fenland and East Cams is in an area of multiple deprivation. So this motion I will put for you, you councillors, states that this council notes the potential closure by the Cambridge and Peterborough Clinical Commissioning Group, known as CCG, of the minor injury units, MIUs, in Wisbech, Doddington and Ely. There are significant funding challenges for the CCG and NHS in the Cambridge and Peterborough area, which is one of the most challenged health economies in the country. Wisbech is an area of multiple deprivation, and the subject of extensive work by this council and partner organisations such as the Wisbech 2020 Project and Fenland District Council in order to help address some of these issues. All three MUIs serve populations in well excess of 30,000 people with significant transport distances and issues separating them from the A&E services at King's Lynn, Peterborough, Cambridge and Hinchinbrook. The CCG has recently engaged in a series of consultations with the public and partners and are in the process of deliberation on the future provision of these services in these areas. In recognition of these issues above, the Council calls on the Chief Executive on behalf of this Council to write to the CCG and explain that the geographical locations mean that a walk-in service must be offered as part of this solution. The ongoing work in Wisbech, Fenland and East Cams to tackle the issues of multiple deprivation would seriously be undermined by a loss of service in these areas. The Council opposes the closure of the MUIs unless a satisfactory replacement service is offered in those geographies. So, this is a plea. So please, please, please support this motion to show that this council really cares about the people in Fenland and East Cams. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Connor. Do you have a seconder? Councillor Bailey.
I would like to second this motion. Thank you, Chairman, and I'll speak now if I may. I've attended various public meetings held by the CCG on this issue, and I've also held a number of closed meetings with the CCG. As an Ely member, I've got a particular interest in representing my residents in Ely. I've also met with Cambridgeshire Community Services, local GPs and other stakeholders to talk about the future of the Princess of Wales Hospital site in Ely as a whole, a process which actually began well over a year ago. In relation to the minor injury unit specifically, it's absolutely clear that a service must be retained on all three sites, and I'm encouraged that the CCG is recognising the importance of this in the way that they speak publicly. At the Princess of Wales in Ely, over 10,000 patients have been successfully treated by that minor injury unit in a 52-week period. That's 10,000 people that have been seen on a walk-in basis, diagnosed, treated and discharged from the system. They've placed no ongoing burden on the system elsewhere, and it's 10,000 less people that have turned up at A&E or their GP surgery, most of which are at maximum capacity locally in Ely. I've been absolutely adamant that these sites must not be lost to healthcare, and it has been a major concern. Ely and Littleport are growth areas, and the Ely site also serves Soham. And the Princess of Wales site is vital to the current and future healthcare provision of Ely and the surrounding area. I am encouraged that the outpatient service now has a new provider and that the CCG is now for the first time publicly talking about the future of the site in relation to its sustainability and transformation plan. So that's encouraging. But when the CCG does come forward with its recommendation and recommended option for the MIUs, I've requested that case studies based on the successfully treated and discharged 10,000 Princess of Wales patients and similarly on the other sites, I want to see where patients will go in their recommended option, who will they see, how easy and quick will it be, and what will happen to those patients afterwards. That's all people really care about. And I was encouraged at the public meeting on the 27th of September that the CCG seemed to be agreeing with some basic principles about the future of the minor injury services. They seem to be agreeing that they should be walk-in, so immediately accessible and available. Obviously, that they should be appropriately staffed, and I think that's the key issue around all of this. That they should have backup diagnostic services, including X-ray, and that it should be local. And I think we can all sign up to that, and I really think that we can work together with the CCG for a good outcome. In East Cams, we believe that it is possible and essential to upgrade the Princess of Wales site, and we're working with the NHS to look at how the hospital can be redeveloped to deliver expanded healthcare services fit for the future of our growing population. I hope that this is a motion we can all get behind to send the strongest possible message from this council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bailey. I have a long list of speakers. Do I have any amendments? In which case, I shall move to the speakers. Councillor Rouse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of council. I wish to add my support to this motion, particularly regard to healthcare in Ely and East Cambridgeshire. Nonetheless, I do support the concerns about Doddington and Wisbech, but you would expect me to speak to the Princess of Wales Hospital and Minor Injuries, which are in my division and a short distance from where I live. In fact, my uncle and his father helped build it when it was the RAF Hospital in 1939 and 1940, and we still regret in Ely that we lost that fantastic hospital because of decision of the Minister of Defence. But we nevertheless saved a hospital which became the Princess of Wales Hospital as we know it. It has grown some of its services, and one of those services is the minor injuries which now serve the community, as Councillor Bailey has said. And the desire to keep the minor injuries to us is inextricably linked with the future of the Prince of Wales Hospital itself. Our community, particularly the rural areas all around Ely, and they go for several of the larger villages as well, as far as Soham, Burwell, you know, and Littleport, look to that hospital for an accessible local hospital, and that's the key in a rural area. We have very good GP practices in Ely, but they are bursting at the seams, one of them, and the population is growing and people are living longer. And this is putting extra demands on the whole service. We know all this. There are shortcomings at the mine injuries. My own son, who is one of my sons who is accident prone, cut his finger very badly the other day, just about 5 o'clock on a Monday, which is when you don't want it to happen. And I rushed him up to the minor injuries. They looked at it and said, no, it's going to need an X-ray, but the X-ray unit has closed. So there I am over at Addenbrookes with him, with his finger all wrapped up. He had the X-ray, there was no further damage, and he came away and we got home sometime after midnight with his finger beautifully wrapped up as it would have been at the minor injuries. So there are shortcomings. Mr. Chairman, I don't think we're asking for anything unreasonable. We're asking for various bodies to work together to provide a comprehensive local small hospital, particularly maintaining and staffing the wards that care for the elderly. Modern technology can link this to the major centres when necessary. And this new hospital could include the two Ely GP practices, one of which is already there, and a minor injuries walk-in service linked to the hospital services and those GP practices to meet the KEO standards. There's also room on the site to provide new facilities for the ambulance service. And I know our own health committee has made some of these points, and they're very valid. If that happens, everyone will be gain. Everyone will gain. This is a reasonable, common-sense request, which is receiving huge backing locally for everyone, and I urge Council to support this motion and send a clear message to all the various bodies involved to work together, put patient care first, and get the best value for money out of the NHS. Thank you, Members. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Sales.
Thank you, Chair. I've got a number of comments to make about this. Firstly, under notes in the first paragraph, right at the top of this council notes the potential closure. Potential is a loaded word, which in this context does not have a clear meaning. Any one of the three could close, all of them could close, or some sort of combination of these hospitals could close. And this issue has been really troubled the Health Scrutiny Committee for some while, and we have dealt with it, and we are waiting to see what is proposed. Make no mistake about it, we support this motion, and we have to support this motion. Particularly, the geographical location means that a walk-in service, etc., is needed. And I do wish to point out that this is only a minor injuries unit. It's not anything else. It's minor injuries, but it is extremely valuable, and it is an asset that we feel that we should not lose. It should not be lost. I also wish to point out that issues of multiple deprivation in Finland, in Wisbeach and the broader area are a direct result of many years of Tory inertia on this matter, and no wonder you're so worried about it now. You should have dealt with this years ago. I remember this being an issue. I'm very angry about this. This issue was raised 10 years ago. I remember Martin Ballard raising it. The Labour group were the only group that was concerned about it. You took the votes, you took the money, you did nothing with multiple deprivation in Finland, and now you're paying the price, and now you're worried about the forthcoming election. I understand your concern. You didn't get elected to cut services or to have this sort of debate, but really, this is a matter of your neglect.
Thank you, Councillor Sales. Councillor Hunt.
Thank you, Chair. It just occurred to me I failed to declare an interest. I live in Ely, and so therefore I do have an interest in particularly the Princess of Wales Hospital in Ely. I'll be very brief because I guess we're all going to be singing from the same hymn sheet. I would underline the fact that the areas served by these three units are not just an area of deprivation. In many cases, they are an area of growth and extreme growth. Any of us who have been to any of the A&Es at Cambridge, Huntingdon, Kingsland or Peterborough know that they are worked almost beyond their capacity. The GPs are also bursting at the seams and having surgeries extended so they have to meet you at the back door after closing time if you want some attention. But they're working very hard and it's fully extended. Just in a nutshell, to reduce it, the service in this area, would be insanity. To extend and expand and improve is the only answer, and actually I urge this chamber to give a unanimous vote of support, so the message is that little bit stronger and a little bit louder, and an unanimous vote would do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hunt. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Chairman. We in the Fens don't have the easy access to services as most other parts of the county. The multiple injury units are really appreciated by people in the Fens, and I'll be supporting this motion on their behalf. And like Councillor Bailey, I was encouraged by the presentations we've had from the CCG about the way forward. There's a great deal of pressure on doctors' surgeries in my division. In my case, I'm having to wait 6 weeks to see the nurse as part of my annual checkup, and until the 15th of December to see my regular doctor. I think a lot of people experience the same things, but that's some of the facts. During a presentation by the CCG, attention was drawn to the fact that 8 till 10 in the morning were the busy periods, with spare capacity during the rest of the day, remainder of the day. Also, that there were well-qualified staff willing and able to embrace other areas of medical service. It was suggested, and I would very much support it, if consideration was given to the transferring of some of the services provided by GPs and be carried out at the MIUs, thus reducing pressure on GP surgeries and using some of the spare capacity. We are, as has been highlighted, very much a growth area, a in the Fens, with big house, big plans going forward there, so there'll be more demand. And the reference to older people as well is very germane, because the number of older people coming along are increasing by big, big numbers. We built extra care sheltered housing on the Doddington site, which was much appreciated, and the Doddington unit is really, really appreciated in my part of the area. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Palmer.
Thank you, Chairman. Like Councillor Hunt, I should declare an interest. Although I don't like to shout it, I was actually born at the RAF Hospital, which means I was born in Ely, and as a proud Southern man, I tend to keep that hidden behind out of view. I fully support this motion, of course I do. It's something that I can't imagine anybody of any political persuasion in this chamber would vote against. It's an obvious need. What worries me is the silo mentality of the CCG, the way that the funding is set up. It means that there isn't a holistic view for Cambridgeshire and there isn't a holistic view for the people. Shutting these services would save money for the CCG, but it certainly wouldn't save money for the NHS, and it wouldn't make a better Cambridgeshire, certainly. I would also warn those members who are involved in Cambridge politics that the potential changes to traffic regulations in Cambridge would mean, if this were to shut, to get from Ely to Adam Brookes across the city in the daytime with half of it shut down would be an extraordinarily hard process, very difficult to do. So think of the knock-on effects across the county of decisions. Certainly the knock-on...
Members.
I think it's a valid point. The knock-on effect of closing these centres, extra pressure on the hospitals, can't be underestimated. Clearly, there must be a better way. Clearly, these should be kept open. I very much hope, as we look to the future, that a devolved Cambridgeshire would be able to look at health holistically and in total, rather than the current system broken up with hospitals, adult social care, CCG, doctor's surgeries, all separate silos, all looking after their own interests, rather than the health of the people in general. So, yes, I will support this motion. Yes, I plead the whole of the chamber to get behind it. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Dr. van der Ven.
Thank you. I absolutely understand the underlying concern of Councillor Connor's motion, and I think it's a universal concern, access to healthcare. And indeed, as all members of the Health Committee did at a recent meeting when this issue was extensively discussed with a great deal of information brought to the committee, which, of course, is contained in the briefing note that was circulated to all of us yesterday. I'm not sure that full council is the right place to be prescriptive about the detail of solutions. I think that the Health Committee is doing a good job, and we have committees for this purpose. There is an implicit issue of transport and access, which has been alluded to by several speakers. And so I would take this opportunity to remind ourselves that we must keep a very careful eye on transport subsidies for Fenland. These are not statutory requirements for this council, but they must be built into the budget, not just on election years, but every year. And I think we had a very strong letter about that at the E&E committee a couple of days ago, which relate very fundamentally to your concerns, I think. Thank you.
Thank you. I have six more speakers, and I'm going to ask you to restrain yourselves to points that have not already been made. Councillor Orji, you're next.
Thank you very much. Well, I was going to take a slightly different view. I fully support the motion, and I would just draw attention to a couple of words which are repeated a couple of times in the motion, and that's multiple deprivation. Multiple deprivation is something that we all understand, but associated with that, what words which don't appear in the motion are lower health outcomes, and those lower health outcomes are particularly associated with certain geographical areas of the county, which are in fact those geographical areas that are referred to in the motion by reference to the particular sites where the multiple injuries units, minor injuries units, are situated. So we're talking about health services within those areas of the county where health outcomes are the lowest. And having said that, I'd just like to refer you to the health and wellbeing strategy, which was widely consulted on a few years ago and included involvement of those who commission services within the health service. And I want to draw two particular statements from this health strategy to mind. It says, we all agreed a number of principles to make sure we make a long-term difference to health and wellbeing throughout the county. And the very first point is reduce inequalities by improving the health of the worst off fastest. And then on the second side of this health and wellbeing strategy, we've got six priorities. And what does it say about each of those priorities? Within each of these priorities, we'll work to improve the health of the poorest fastest. And yet what we're talking about here are health services where health outcomes are amongst the lowest in the county, and what we need to do is to improve the health of people living in those areas, and therefore it's very important that I think we retain the services of a walk-in service in this area, that we oppose the closure unless a satisfactory replacement service is offered in these localities. Otherwise, what we're doing is undermining the work that we're trying to do in reducing health inequalities. And most recently, when the Health Committee has looked at certain health inequalities, what we've seen is that in certain factors, there have been small improvements in Fenland, but there have been greater improvements in other parts of the county. So in fact, in some cases, health inequalities are actually growing as we speak, despite all the best efforts that we take. And therefore, we want to ensure that the health services within these areas are not adversely affected by any actions taken by the CCG. So I'm very happy to support the motion.
Thank you. Councillor Palmer, if you'd be kind enough to switch your microphone off, please.
Oh, very sorry.
Councillor Dupre.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Hunt said that he expressed a wish that services in our area should be extended, expanded and improved. And I think that's absolutely wonderful, and I'm sure there would be no disagreement around this chamber about that. But we must not underestimate the challenges that the CCG is facing at the moment. Multiple challenges, firstly from systemic and persistent underfunding, the specific underfunding as well, specific budgetary impact of the collapse of contracts such as Uniting Care, and also coming down the tracks, the KEO standards, which have already been alluded to, which, while all very fine for large metropolitan areas like Liverpool or Hackney or Manchester, would be a real problem to implement in a rural area. And the CCG is a vanguard authority in this issue. There are no previous models of attempting to move towards KEO standards in a rural area. And I think that there are massive challenges for that, which we are at the forefront of exploring. There is a strong attachment in Fenland and East Cambridgeshire to the provision of these services locally, and a very, very deep concern indeed at the impact of losing local access to local minor injury services. And Councillor Sales talks about these being for minor injuries. He's quite right, but that is a misnomer. It covers all sorts of issues, and they see all sorts of patients through the door, there's a very, very valuable contribution that these services make to the local health economy. I think it's unfortunate in a way that this motion has been superseded by the very excellent work that the Health Committee has done on its scrutiny on this area, looking at issues that aren't really covered in the motion, the effects of growth, the need to engage and involve GPs if there's to be additional expectations on them, the need to look at this in the context of the whole range of services that are provided, the need for good communication, something I think we could argue has not exactly been forthcoming in the past, the need for service standards that people can clearly understand and know how they fit into that, and also the need to evaluate into this the extra pressures that may be placed on services such as A&E, which is already bursting at the seams if people are directed to there. This is something that people feel very strongly about. It is something that is of very great importance to people in Fenland and East Cambridgeshire, and I very much hope that the CCG will get this right and move towards the right decision that will continue to retain local services in Fenland and East Cambridgeshire for those who need it.
Thank you, Councillor Hoy.
Thank you. It's a real shame, really, that Councillor Sales made this political, because I was hoping actually it would stay unpolitical today. It doesn't really surprise me, because lots of Momentum members in Wisbeach bust activists to the public meetings with their flyers and their petitions and, you know, their rhetoric. So, you know, if anyone is electioneering on this issue, it's pretty clear who it is, and it's not us. It's a real shame as well, because, well, it's not, you know, you can laugh all you like, but, you know, the flyers speak for themselves, really. It's a shame, because that politicking actually did allow the CCG a bit of a get out, because at the first public meeting, they had two public meetings in Wisbeach because they were oversubscribed, and I went to both of them, and the first one was very much a no decisions has been made, this is about the KEO standards and things like that. The second one was much more, oh, this is about funding, and it just strikes me that it was, seeing as they were supposed to be identical meetings, it was very funny that they then had this little get out clause, which they were given by loads of members of Unisons that are also Labour councillors elsewhere. That was a real shame, but anyway, that's by the by. The point is that we must retain this service in Wisbeach, as well as obviously Doddington and Ely. If we are supposed to be having many thousands more homes, we do need, obviously, to keep services and improve services. We also must remember that Wisbeach is slightly different to Doddington and Ely, because we do contract a lot of services in from King's Lynn, and I think the media has got a bit confused about the outpatients and various things like that when they were saying, you know, that Doddington and Ely had been saved and Wisbeach hadn't. Well, it wasn't that at all. Wisbeach already had its outpatient services sorted out, so I think that needs to be clear. But I think really, let's hope we can get the better service for people in Wisbeach and Doddington and Ely. Let's hope that what happens in future is better. If it is going to be sort of with the GPs, we do need to obviously make sure the GPs can handle that. Hopefully it will be a much better service than we've got now, but we must fight this closure with everything we can.
Thank you. Councillor Kavanagh.
Yeah, I fully support Councillor Connor's motion. A lot has been said already. I'd just like to say the reason I am supporting it. It's in the context of the impending cuts to the pharmacy service. Members are surely aware of the information that was put out recently that there are proposed cuts to the pharmacy services. Pharmacies are at the core of the health provision for all communities, particularly deprived communities, not just in Fenland but across the country. These cuts are going to start in December. The cuts, I believe, mount up to something like £170 million. That means every pharmacy in England is going to lose £14,500. And there are going to be inevitable cuts to the pharmacy service. And that's why I'm supporting this motion to preserve the minor injury units. Because we all know what pharmacies do in communities. They're actually a good substitute for the doctor's surgery. They're also a good substitute for people going to A&E. So keep that in mind when you come to vote on this motion. The pharmacies are also under threat.
Thank you, Councillor Bullen.
Thank you, Chairman. I agree with a lot of what Councillor Sales and Councillor Dukeley said, and I will be supporting this motion. I see no reason not to. What I would do is question why it's in front of this full council, because from what I can see of what the Health Committee has been doing over the last couple of months, they have this very much in hand, and I believe that it is their job to liaise with the CCG on a partnership agreement or an arrangement and come to the right decisions. I do not believe it is the job of this council to overrule what's happening within the Health Committee, and I do not believe that this motion should have been brought in the first place. However, I will support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Gillick.
The historical picture for the hospital in Wisbech is quite remarkable. It was paid for and set up by the borough of Wisbech. It had a whole, when I first went there, huge quantity of people who were friends of the hospital, and gradually the thing has been whittled away by the accountants. And another thing that has happened with it historically is that when the last anaesthetist finished there, the Royal College of Anaesthetists would not permit one of its crew to be set there. It wasn't a big enough development place, it wasn't a teaching hospital, and so as a consequence, no operations. No anaesthetists, no operations, and that was a big step down. And it's been whittled and whittled down. I know some of the nurses who work there with laying in and what they call it, rehabilitation for after hospital. And the beds are all taken away in one ward, and they never came back. They went away for refurbishment, and they never reappeared. And it's like walking around a delightful hospital, which is void and empty. And the other thing at the back, they put built a new home some 30 years ago possibly, which stands empty now, and that was for people with dementia and mental things. Gone. The other thing that went, of course, at the similar time, 1980, and Kenneth Clark turned up, first job he did as a health secretary, was to close the maternity home and also the mental health unit. It's been whittled down, and it is because the health service wants to concentrate big battalions, and little places like Wisbech don't matter, and they can get away with it. What you do now is, if I cut myself, as I do frequently because of the work I do, and so I go wait until about 1 o'clock in the morning, then I go to the King's Lynn or Peterborough to the ENA, and they can take it out of my eye or stitch me up, whatever it is. And I think a lot of people do that, and it's such a shame, because it is there's 40,000 odd people in that area. It's a place where there's a lot of industry, a lot of injuries, and it's used a lot of sports. They go there, but it's got smaller and smaller and smaller. Isn't even a doctor there, generally speaking. And the other thing I would just quickly like to say is, a lot of the consultants that are come across on a day basis to their various faculties, they don't like coming because they have to pay for their fuel, and they work. They say, one said to me, a very nice man, but he said, I'm working for £2.50 an hour. It's ridiculous. You know, so there's a pressure against it. And there's who you've got to attack. You've got to attack the financial thing. Obviously, I will support it, but it's very sad to see. But it isn't just the committees that sit and talk and have goodwill that are going to make the difference. It's the money boys.
Good. Thank you. Councillor Connor, do you wish to sum up?
Yes, I just say a couple of things.
Pop your microphone on then, could you please? Councillor Connor, pop on your mic.
I certainly recognise the excellent work the Health Committee have done on the MIUs, and I thank them most profusely for that. But I'd also like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the councillors who will hopefully be voting for this motion. Thank you all.
Thank you, Councillor Connor. No member spoke in dissent, so I am not proposing to take a vote on this, but to ask you to agree it by acclamation. Are you happy with that? Thank you very much, members. Now, shall we move on to the next motion, which is that submitted by Councillor Count. Can I ask Councillor Count to move and speak to his motion as set out on pages 3 and 4 of the agenda? Councillor Count.
Thank you, Chairman. I shall move into the speech, if you may. I'm sure many of you, like me, and particularly in light of the motion we've just heard, recognise the significant challenges that the NHS and CCG face in this area. It is one of the 11 most financially challenged health economies in the UK. And it is for that reason that we need to find a way to address the issues of our health colleagues that I have submitted this motion today. Virtually all of the preamble in my motion I've lifted directly from the CCG's Fit for the Future document. So there's very little in there that people may find something they can argue about, but they might find some of it uncomfortable reading to recognise that these are the challenges we face. And one part in the CCG's Fit for the Future document is the very worrying statement, we spend about £150 million more a year than we receive. By 2021, this overspend is set to grow to about £250 million a year if we do nothing. And it's for that reason that we have to go about with the CCG and this council, we have similar issues here, on a transformation agenda and not just ask for more money. As part of that journey, we realised that there may be road bumps along the way, slight hiccups. And I think the MIU and the potential closure of them is one of those issues that highlights that when you go through a transformation regime, if you need to transform something, you have to have the right answer. It cannot just be about cost cutting. And that is why I've proposed this motion, which clarifies this council's support for the journey that the CCG is undertaking. It also builds on and reinforces and reminds the CCG that some of their ambitions match our own, such as reducing inequalities across the region. It provides, I believe, a timely reminder about the benefits of the community hospital estate, which, if utilised correctly, can help alleviate the ever-growing pressure on accidents and emergencies at acute care hospitals. Furthermore, it asks that the CC joins with the county in viewing communities themselves as part of long-term solutions and calls on them to invest in those communities alongside us. As well as building on our relationship with the CCG, we can also add our voice in our interactions with government, which is why I ask for your support in lobbying government for them to assist this transformational programme with significant funding and also with support. And I also further ask them to revisit how funding is allocated when we know that there's a clear failure to recognise the difficulties caused by the gap between growth in an area and when the funding later on arrives for that growth. I therefore ask for you all in this chamber to add your voice to mine and support this motion in its entirety. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Couch. Do you have a seconder?
Yes, I'm very happy to second the motion as set out on the order paper. Thank you.
Your reserve. Thank you. Do I have any amendments? Councillor Bullen.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, the amendment is in front of all members and I propose it be accepted.
Do you have a seconder? Councillor Netzinger.
I'd like to second the amendment and reserve my right to speak.
Right, so we have an amendment that has been submitted by Councillor Bullen and seconded by Councillor Couch.
On a point of order. Now, it's all very well for Councillor Bullen to say that that's the piece of paper set out in front of us, that's the amendment to the thing. However, those people that aren't in this chamber will have one in front of us. Basically, we've got about a page of my motion, and there's a few lines left. It's at least half of the motion has gone. Now, my understanding of council procedure is if a motion is fundamentally amended to make it less meaningful, but substantially meaningless compared to the original motion, it cannot be allowed. My original motion calls on two substantive things: to write to the CCG to explain how we will work with them, deliver transformation, invest in our communities, and a second thing, which is write to the government and ask for them for various things. So those two substantive parts of my motion are broken down into sub-things, but the first one has been entirely, completely removed by this amendment. I therefore submit that my amendment, which described why we need transformation, how we'll go about transformation, the way to use transformation, and the second part, asking for money and support with that transformation, is now completely undermined and cannot be amended in this manner.
Thank you, Councillor Couch. I will take advice on this. Councillor Count, the Standing Orders Amendments to Motions section of the Constitution requires any amendment not to negate the motion. And whilst I take the point that part of your motion you are arguing has disappeared, it doesn't in fact, the amendment does not in fact negate the motion entirely. Now, the monitoring officer's advice is to err on the side of generosity towards the amendment in historically, normally, because it gives the opportunity for members to discuss it and then take a vote on the amendment. So I think on that basis, and having taken advice, I will allow the amendment, and it is up to members then to consider whether it's an appropriate amendment and vote accordingly. Where have we got to with this amendment? Yes, right. So the debate is Councillor Bullen, if you wish to... No, you've had your chance, actually, now that I think about it. You said it was right in front of you, and that was it. Do you wish to speak more?
Following the last comment, yes, I would now, please, Chairman.
Right, I'm being very generous here, so I'm sure you'll be brief.
Thank you, Chair. I will be as brief as I can. I thought that the amendment was fairly self-explanatory, if you'll let me elaborate on that. I see this motion as being in two parts. This council telling the CCG what it should do and then going to government and asking for a fairer finance deal. I have no problems whatsoever with the second part of this amendment. But having read the minutes of the Health Committee on both the 8th of September and the 6th of October and the recommendations therein of those committees, I believe that the part I've admitted is actually the responsibility of that committee. And I said it in the previous amendment, and of course the Health and Wellbeing Board. It is not this council's position, in my belief, to tell the CCG what to do. I mean, we would certainly feel insulted if the CCG tried to tell us what to do, and I don't believe we should be doing that. I believe that our Health Committee, and indeed the Health and Wellbeing Board, are doing a very good job at the moment. They've got a very good liaison going with the CCG at the moment. Nothing is perfect, but they are, in my opinion, doing a good job. I do not believe we should be telling the CCG what to do, but I do believe that it is right and proper that Council Account has asked the Chief Executive to write to the Secretary of State for Health and local MPs on behalf of both this council and the people we represent, and that is laid down in the second part, of which I have no problems whatsoever. Thank you,
Councillor Bullen. Councillor Orgy. This is on the amendment.
On the amendment, yes. I'd like to oppose the amendment. Mm-hmm. I mean, for those people who are not in the chamber, it's about taking out the section which call upon us to deliver, write to the CCG and call upon them to deliver a transformation of service programme, etc. Work closely with the Council of Social Care, deliver a transformation programme that seeks to reduce health inequalities, and join with the County Council to invest in their communities, etc. So those are the sections of this original motion which are proposed to be taken out. I find it surprising that we want to take out, for example, deliver a transformation programme that seeks to reduce geographical inequalities, ensuring good, equitable service access to healthcare throughout all parts of the county. I find it surprising that as a County Council we want to take out that in a message that we sent to the CCG, particularly as I referred to in the previous item which I spoke on, where I referred to the health and wellbeing strategy, where there's a big emphasis on reducing inequalities, and we know that inequalities are geographically located. And when I look at the CCG's developing sustainability transformation plan, it does set out a partnership approach, but it identifies one of the local challenges, including health, local authority and other care services are not as joined up as we need them to be. And yet this amendment seeks to take out writing to the CCG to call on them to work closely with us and our social care and public health services in order to deliver a joined up transformation based on individual needs. And also takes out calling on the CCG to join with the County Council to invest in our communities and contribute towards sustainable projects which increase resilience and so on. We need to work together and we need to send a strong message that that's what we want to do with the CCG. So taking those out of this motion, I think is I find words difficult to explain, express my views on the sense of doing that. So I completely oppose this amendment to the original wording of the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Orji. Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Chairman. As Vice Chairman of the Adults Committee, I think it's important to point out that the Adult Service went through a very detailed peer review recently, and one of the findings of that peer review was the need to work much more closely with our CCG in terms of commissioning and other various activities and opportunities that were not being embraced. So it was a finding of peers in other parts of the country that is actually reflected in this motion. And the lack of that activity directly affects this council and our residents of Cambridgeshire. We are directly affected by that work not happening quickly enough or closely enough. And there are significant opportunities that Cambridgeshire County Council is working on that the CCG is not embracing and not working with us on. And so I wholeheartedly encourage anything that can encourage the CCG to come with us and work with us. And clearly, the way that this motion is worded, the section that is being taken out is the supporting reasoning as to why we're asking for additional funding to make this transformation happen. So the one without the other just does not work. And certainly, from the perspective of the Adults Committee, this is vitally important that it stays in.
Thank you. Councillor Schumann.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll be very brief. And just to add that I certainly didn't get the perspective that's been identified in the amendment, which was telling the CCG what we wish them to do. We have no jurisdiction over the CCG, and we're well aware of the fact. Instead, I read this as actually putting a hand out to the CCG and asking them to work with us more closely, because that's in the best interest of this County Council and the CCG in their transformation programmes, as they have identified themselves. I cannot understand why that wouldn't be a positive thing, and I completely disagree with taking out the very essence of this motion, which is saying transformation is about working together, not having a silo mentality and simply asking for more money, because if we do that, we'll be told very clearly no. It's about working together and explaining how you intend to transform and work differently. So, Chairman, I urge every member to vote down this amendment and vote with the original motion, because it has absolutely the right message.
Thank you. Councillor Hipkin.
I simply want to make the point that I don't regard the words call upon as the equivalent of dictating to. In my understanding of the English language, to call upon...
Give it a jiggle.
Why am I radiating so much electricity? I know I'm a dynamic person, but really, this is ridiculous.
John.
Yes?
There you are.
Ah! This is where I belong.
The members, Councillor Hipkin, would you like to continue?
So apart from that semantic point, which I think is well worth mentioning, the particular sections that the amendment seeks to omit all represent strategic policy issues that this council has adopted, and this gives us a further opportunity to emphasise those strategic objectives. The previous motion, for example, is well covered in the first of the four, which it is proposed we should remove, the need for local adaptable services. We all know how important the joint working of social care and public health is. We've been trying to get that going for ages. We certainly support the equity argument in the third of these points, and in the fourth, resilience is one of the primary goals of the transformation agenda that we have with this county. So This is the embodiment of four of the most important principles that this council currently has adopted, and I think it would be silly and irrelevant and redundant to remove them.
Thank you, Councillor Hipkin. Councillor Netzinger, you reserved your right to speak. You indicated that you wish to take it now. Thank you.
I wanted to respond to some of the points that have been made about what is being done by this amendment. This amendment will not take out the work that is being done between the Council and the CCG. That work is going ahead and will continue to go ahead. What the amendment takes out is the patronising instruction to the CCG to deliver specific things, most of which they are already doing. My particular concern is with the last sentence of the instructions to the CCG, which calls upon them to contribute to sustainable projects. Given the role of this council in refusing to contribute its own fair share to social care, and the fact that the chair of the CCG, the chief executives of the health trusts in Cambridgeshire, all wrote to the leader of this council last February asking that this council raise council tax by 4%, as this was their assumed level of funding from central government. Under these circumstances, for this council, and particularly for this council leader, to be lecturing the CCG and asking them to contribute to council projects and asking for money from massively overstretched NHS services seems totally unreasonable. So I wanted to draw the attention of the meeting to that particular section in this amendment and why we should therefore not be supporting, why we should take that section out. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bowden.
Thank you, Chairman. I do not support this amendment. I believe that the health economy, and for that matter the social care economy in Cambridgeshire, faces massive challenges. I think we all know that. And partnership working is absolutely essential when it comes to meeting those challenges. Now, many members will be aware that before I became a member of this council in a by-election a year ago, I was the member of the board of the Clinical Commissioning Group with responsibility for finance and performance. So I do have a little bit of knowledge as far as this is concerned, and I can say that if 18 months ago a motion such as this had come to the CCG from this council, it would not have been regarded as patronising instruction or a lecture. It would have been regarded as it is intended, and that is, in the spirit of cooperation, to find a way of working together to move forwards for the interests of both the CCG and of the Council, and for that matter, of the people of Cambridgeshire. There is no instruction being given here. There's certainly no patronising taking place. What we're asking for, what we're suggesting, is that there be better partnership working. And the problem isn't the principle of partnership working. The problem is how to manage that, especially from the CCG's point of view, given its financial position. But that's moving one step beyond this particular amendment. The amendment, I believe, is integral to the motion, and therefore I would ask that this amendment be defeated.
Thank you. Councillor Williams.
Thank you. It's a very strange way of having a partnership when you tell your partner what they should do. And we have a close partnership with CCG through our committee system. We don't need to be dictating to them from this council chamber what we believe they should do as a result of our own failings for raising enough council tax to be able to provide a decent level of care ourselves for our citizens. I think this is an insult, actually, and I fully support the amendment. I just find it incredible that anyone could believe that you can have a partnership with an organisation while you insult them and you basically tell them what you believe they should be doing.
Thank you. Councillor Walsh.
Thank you, Mr Chair. In mind of your delicate sensibilities, I'll try not to be too boring or blunt. The group on this side are rather over egging the pudding. For a Liberal Democrat to call anybody patronising, I must admit, made me want to change my view on this amendment straight away. I have a lot of sympathy for what Councillor Count is trying to do in this motion. But again, he finds himself in the position, as does the group on that side, where they're trying to make decisions for Cambridgeshire in spite of every decision that's being made by the Department of Health and its political masters. I think it's internally inconsistent to call for a transformation of services that also reduces inequalities We see it in this council, in every local authority. The term service transformation means nothing more than massive cuts. And the idea that you can reduce inequality while pursuing fiscal policies such as these is simply internally inconsistent. So I have sympathy for a whole series of things inside it, integrating social care with the NHS and all the rest of it. But it's internally inconsistent, and so the Labour Group will be supporting the amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Walsh. I have no other people who have indicated to speak, so Councillor Count, Walsh, would you like to speak now?
Yes, please. Right. Councillor Wilson.
Yeah, no, I know. It's just we're making very heavy weather of this, but anyway. Right, Councillor Wilson, full steam ahead.
There are three points I wanted to make, and I have a lot of sympathy for this part of the motion as well, because we should be supporting working in partnership with the CCG and our other NHS partners. But the way this is written, in calling them to do specific things, when most of the stuff that we're trying to do, we are doing already, and we have built into our business plans for next year that we're going to achieve massive savings because of those partnerships coming to fruition and money being allocated to the right partner. To me, this element of the motion will not achieve that. They will just come back to us and say, well, why have we got into this position? Well, if you recall, we've had a Tory government for 2 years. We've had the opportunity to put up our precept by 4% last year, and we only put it up by 2%. The proposal at the moment is only to put it up by 2%. If I were a member of the CCG, I would say, put your own house in order before you tell me what to do.
Thank you. And finally, Councillor Count.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm very disappointed by what I've been hearing today, particularly as a lot of people have tried to fixate on suggested implications of my wording that was never there. I never attempted to give an instruction to the CCG. I work alongside the CCG. I went with David Jenkins and had a meeting with Tracy Downing and others at the CCG on the MIU units. The CCG is a regular attendee. He's at all the Public Service Board meetings, at the devolution meetings, where I work alongside them. And we always talk about working better together. And when I talked about call upon the Chief Executive to write to them on our behalf, it was for the Council to endorse the approach that we take of working with the CCG. And it was not in the view of telling them what to do. And when we look at the list of the things that I've talked about, you know, reducing social, reducing inequalities across geographic areas, it was well intentioned, very much, very high up on our agenda. I think if the parties that had striven so quickly to delete over half of my motion really thought about it, and if that is the true intent of why they're opposing this, they could have simply changed my words and call upon them to invite them to work with us. But instead of actually choosing some words that would have destroyed half their arguments, they've actually destroyed half the motion. So I'm very disappointed to see the way it's gone. I will continue to work with the CCG, as I'm sure the Health Committee will, and the rest of our organisation. That is our role, our duty, and you know, I look forward to the fact that we can transform, that we actually work together to transform the service in all its guises. And I certainly don't operate in that room or this room in a way that people should say that I'm the sort of person that tells people what to do, because that isn't in my nature. So I'm very disappointed the way that this debate has gone. And we could have ended up with, if that was the problem, a better motion with three words adjusted rather than stripping out half the intent. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Count. We'll now move to a vote on the amendment. Mrs. Rowe, if you'd be kind enough, please.
Would members please press the button marked present? Members in favour of the amendment, please press the button marked yes. Members against the amendment, please press the button marked no. Members wishing to abstain, please press the button marked abstain. I'm now closing the vote. Chairman, the result of the vote is 30 votes in favour, 31 against, no abstentions. The amendment is therefore lost.
Right, members, we revert to the substantive motion. To Councillor Bowden.
Thank you. Are you inviting me to speak on the substantive motion, Chairman?
I am inviting you to speak on that.
Thank you very much indeed. I thought I might have been too quick. I very much welcome the motion which has been put forward. all of it, that is. And there were three parts in particular which struck me as being particularly useful. The first is the recognition that we are finally moving towards fair funding formula for the country as a whole, as far as NHS is concerned, which will help to remedy the systemic long-term underfunding which Cambridgeshire has suffered under successive governments for a long period of time. So that is very much to be welcomed. The second thing I very much particularly welcomed within the motion was the call upon government to give additional transformational support to Cambridge's NHS, because Cambridge's NHS needs that additional transformational support because, again, speaking from first-hand experience, the CCG, whilst excellent in achieving transactional change, does not have the best of records when it comes to transformational change. So they do need additional support from government, and us asking for that, I believe, is entirely appropriate. The third thing which I welcomed was the comment about closer working between ourselves and the CCG. And mention is made of asking that we work more closely together on social care and public health, and also on investing in communities and so on. And that is all very, very welcome and very much to be supported. And there are ways in which we do already work extremely well, one example being the work which is done within the Better Care Fund. However, what I would ask the leader of the council to do, in addition to all of this, I would ask him to address the fact that we lack an effective, overarching and meaningful high-level strategic agreement with the CCG to push for joint transformational change. And I believe that if we were to have such an agreement at the highest level, it could percolate down through both organisations to achieve far more than we've managed to achieve so far. So I'd ask him to consider that, but I fully support everything which is in this motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Count, I understand you have an amendment.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you for giving me this opportunity. It did come up in my sort of closing speech to the earlier amendment, and as good as my word, I'm going to try and deliver on that. If we look at the paper and the part that says write to the CCG on behalf of the county and call upon them to, I wish to remove the words call upon them to and replace them with invite them to work with us. I do hope that with that amendment that I will enjoy some more support from the council across the wider council than the earlier paper, which, as I said, could have been improved if that was the problem that people had about my language.
You still need two.
Invite them to work with us too. Thank you very much.
Yep. That seems in order.
The seconder. Do you have a seconder?
Are you happy to? Councillor Orgy, this is not a alteration to the original motion. This is a separate amendment. So you're seconding again, as it were.
Yes.
Yep, you're happy to do that. Right. Well, members, you have an amendment in front of you, which
point
is.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, but unless my maths is wrong, those figures are wrong. Can I have a count, please, of the votes on the amendment? And I double check that the people who have voted are here.
Ms. Rose says there should be.
There should be 61 people. You've got 8 apologies.
61. Councillor Bullen, as a point of order, do you, given the result and the subsequent amendment, do you wish to pursue this?
Yes, I do.
Okay, in which case I'm going to propose a 5-minute adjournment so that Mrs. Rowe has the opportunity to do a head count. So, Councillor Schumann?
Chairman, just in case this helps as a point of clarity, Councillor Bullen, you are counting the Vice-Chair in your numbers. Because I notice you're counting the numbers here and not including the Vice Chair, who is obviously voting with us.
Well, so is the Chair.
Can we just quickly.
All right. Do people feel a comfort break of 5 minutes is appropriate? Right, well, I think we'll kill two birds with one stone on this ground. So I'm going to give you until 5:30. Before you leave, if you could only leave by that door, and the monitoring officer is going to count you out.
I'm here.
Right, members, can I ask you to take your seats and we shall carry on rewriting this motion word by word. First of all, has any gentleman left his mobile phone in the lavatories? Well, Councillor Bailey, if you did leave your phone... It's all about equality, Councillor Bailey. It's all about equality. Right, members, if we can get back to the business in hand, which I have to say has become very disjointed. Councillor Count has proposed an amendment, which is a small word change, and he has had that seconded by Councillor Orji. Oh, yes, sorry, Councillor Bullen.
Thank you, Chairman. Council, please. I would like to apologise to Council. The monitoring officer assures me that there were 61 people who left the chamber after I stated, asked for a count. Therefore, I can only oppose as a mere aeronautical engineer. My maths isn't quite up to the standard it should be, and I apologise profusely.
Thank you, Councillor Bullen. Thank you. Right, as I was saying, Councillor Count has proposed an amendment. Councillor Orji has seconded it. We have had one or two speakers on it. I can't remember who they were now, I'm sorry to say. I think Councillor Bowden, you might have given us beforehand. I also have at least one name written down, which is yours, Councillor Sales. Did you wish to speak to this amendment? No. Councillor Whitehead, in which case... No, Councillor Sales, you had your opportunity, too late. Councillor Whitehead.
I'd like to propose, Chair, that the amendment be put to the Council for vote.
Thank you. I propose to proceed on that basis. Mrs. Rowe, if you would like to take us through a vote, please, on the amendment proposed by Councillor Count.
Would members please press the button marked present? Members in favour of the amendment, please press the button marked yes. Members against the amendment, please press the button marked no. Members wishing to abstain, please press the button marked abstain. Can I just check, Councillor Manley, did you... You did yours, did you? Sorry, I'm just checking because you've moved seats. Okay, thank you.
No.
I am now closing the vote. Chairman, the result of the vote is 59 votes in favour, one abstention, none against. The amendment is therefore carried.
Councillor Netzinger, do you have a further amendment?
I'm afraid I do, Chairman.
May I, before you continue, urge you to consider whether we need an amendment on a motion that a substantive motion already amended, which seems to have support of the Chamber.
You may urge me, Chairman, but during the course of our break, some things became increasingly clear, and I would like to explain to the Council the reasons
for
my amendment.
Okay, proceed with your amendment, and I shall ask... Right, Councillor Netzinger, if you'd like to take a seat,
I'm not sure whether it's a point of order or a point of clarification, but we've just voted substantially in favour of something. How can we then amend it?
We have voted on the amendment, which was just about to become the substantive motion, but Councillor Netzinger feels that a further amendment would be a good idea. And we are now going to hear what that amendment is and see if she has a seconder.
My amendment is that in the paragraph that starts, join with the County Council to invest in our communities and contribute towards sustainable projects that increase resilience, that we should include the words ideas and staff time after contribute, so that it reads, join with the County Council to invest in our communities and contribute ideas and staff time towards sustainable projects that increase resilience, prevent high-cost interventions, and enhance people's lives. Would you like me to explain my reasoning for that?
In just 1 minute, firstly, do you have a seconder? Councillor Leake. Councillor Count, as the proposer of the substantive motion, now amended, do you accept Councillor Netzinger's change?
Chairman.
Okay,
no.
Fine. Okay, Councillor Netzinger, you're up.
Thank you. During the five-minute break that we just had, I went to ask Councillor Count whether he would be willing to accept the word ideas after contribute, in the hope that it could clarify the point about whether this motion was in fact asking the CCG for money. I had hoped that we would be able to include that point and therefore we would be able to support his motion. However, during the course of that conversation, it became clear that it was absolutely the intention of this motion to ask the CCG for money, that the request to invest in our communities and contribute towards sustainable projects was going to take the form of a request to the CCG to contribute towards a transformation fund. I think those of us who have sat on the Health Committee and who have sat on many other committees are very well aware of the fact that the CCG simply does not have any money to contribute towards such projects, and I do not think it is right that we should be asking them. We should be well aware of the extreme pressure. In fact, the first part of this motion makes entirely clear the extreme pressure that NHS services in Cambridgeshire are under, and we should not be asking the CCG to make this kind of financial commitment. I think it is entirely reasonable to ask them to work with us, and I think it is reasonable to expect a contribution of staff time to try and make sure that we can transform our project, our services together to make them more efficient. But to ask them to make financial contributions is simply unachievable, and I do not think we should be doing it.
Thank you. Councillor Criswell.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a very great interest in that item four, the fourth point that's being discussed. And as far as I'm concerned, the Resilience Fund, the innovation fund that we have set aside, is an invest-to-save fund. We haven't got spare cash either, Chairman. That's money that we hope to invest in our communities with evidence that we will get payback for that money. Not only will it enhance people's lives and increase resilience, it will reduce services in the future. And the invitation to the CCG to contribute to that is not exclusively money, of course. We would welcome all their other input as well. But for them to join with Invest to Save projects, we know the CCG already engaged in the prevention agenda. It makes perfect sense for them. But it's joined up working with the prevention agenda on the understanding, Chairman, that they would only invest in projects that they know they will get a return on by reducing their spend in future. So that's the basis, Chairman, of this working together. If we can make that more clear, I'm quite happy to do so. But it's invest to save money, not a gift, Chairman, that we're after. Thank you.
Thank you for that very clear explanation, Councillor Criswell. I have no other people indicating to speak. Councillor Leake, you reserved your right to speak. It's now your opportunity.
Thank you, Chairman. The difference is very clear. The NHS is strapped for cash. Unlike the NHS, Cambridgeshire has all the money it wants. All the money it wants. Remember, just a few short months ago, you had the chance to raise as much as you wanted to fund Cambridge's services. You chose to go below the limit. You have all the money that you want. You've chosen. That's the level that a council needs to spend at. The NHS doesn't have that luxury. The NHS is genuinely strapped for cash. You're only strapped for cash because you won't put your hands in your pocket. That's the difference.
Thank you for that, Councillor Leake. Councillor Count, you have the right to sum up.
Thank you. There were basically...
Members, can we please listen to Councillor Count? Thank you.
There were basically two points that were raised. I'll take the second one first, if I may. There is a direct relationship between the amount of wealth that individuals have and their well-being. And by raising taxes, it affects their wealth at home. So therefore, when people take a balanced decision between how much wealth we can gain through council tax, it is against the backdrop of how that affects the individuals of our communities. Right. So therefore, I resent this idea that we have an unlimited pool of cash out there just because we can tax everybody to the hill, which seems to the wish of the other people here. So I refute that argument. Now, the second point that was made, I do believe it's from a position of naivety and misunderstanding, not from any ill will or ill will. Steve, Councillor Criswell summed up very well, I think, about what we're talking about with money. So we do want, when we said no, or when I said no to this adjustment, ideas and support and input from the CCG. Yes, we do want all that. We welcome all that, that support their ideas for moving forwards. What we're talking about, as well as that, is working with them to have Investor Save projects. We are not going to ask the CCG to plough money into County Council Investor Save projects that deliver savings solely to the council. And we wouldn't expect them to say yes to any of that. However, if by working together we find projects that deliver savings both to the CCG, the NHS and the County Council, why would it be improper to say you put some in as well because you will benefit the same as we will? So it's a very simple thing. It's not very difficult to understand, but perhaps there was some misunderstanding by the approaching us in a last-minute thing with another amended motion in a corridor rather than actually dealing with these things long before it got to this, what is becoming a very messy debate today, which shouldn't have been like this. So we do oppose this amendment, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Count. We now move to a vote on Councillor Netzinger's amendment. Mrs. Rowe, if you would be kind enough, please.
Would members please press the button marked present? Members in favour of the amendment, please press the button marked yes. Members against the amendment, please press the button marked no. Members wishing to abstain, please press the button marked abstain. I'm now closing the vote. Chairman, the result of the vote is 29 votes in favour, 31 against and 1 abstention. The amendment is therefore lost.
Thank you, Mrs. Rowe. So we now move to the original substantive motion as amended. Councillor Count. You don't have to go through it all over again.
I feel that this motion, through its various guises, has been given sufficient debate. I am heartened by the support I had by moving those few words that seemed to create such difficulty for some people, that at that point in time there was a 59 in support and 1 abstention. And I do hope that perhaps now that we have ended up with a full and complete motion in front of us, we can enjoy that same support to go and work with the CCG delivering transformation.
Thank you, Councillor Count. Anybody else? Councillor Jenkins.
Chairman, I believe you asked me to sum up, didn't you?
Oh, well, I asked you to speak.
Why would I speak when I'm summing up?
Because I'd started again, quite frankly, Councillor Count. but actually, you do raise a very good point. That's fine. So I will either take all the speakers or none of them. It's entirely... Right, Councillor Sales, you've got a point of order, do you?
No, I don't want to speak.
Right.
Chairman, we ask the vote be put.
Thank you. I do feel that we have had enough discussion on this, quite frankly. So I am now taking a vote not on the substantive item, but on the proposal from Councillor Count that the question now be put, I think is how you put it. Okay, Mrs. Rowe?
Would members please press the button marked present? Members in favour of the motion, please press the button marked yes. Members against the motion, please press the button marked no. Members wishing to abstain, please press the button marked abstain.
Chair.
Councillor Van de Ven.
There's so much talking I can't hear. Could this be explained again, what we're about to do, please?
Councillor Count has proposed the question be now put, which means effectively, because I have agreed to accept that, there is no further debate. The vote that Mrs. Rowe is in the middle of is on Councillor Count's motion that the question be now put. In a moment, you will have yet another opportunity to vote on this motion on the substantive amended item. Is everybody clear?
Right. I am now closing the vote.
And I'm starting a list.
Chairman, the result of the vote is 33 votes in favour, 22 against and 1 abstention. The motion is therefore carried.
Members, if I could ask for your attention, please, because we are not, in fact, halfway through the motions yet. The next vote is that Mrs. Rowe will conduct is on the substantive motion as amended by agreement. Mrs. Rowe.
Would members please press the button marked present? Members in favour of the substantive motion, please press the button marked yes. Members against the substantive motion, please press the button marked no. Members wishing to abstain, please press the button marked abstain. I'm now closing the vote. Chairman, the result of the vote is 43 votes in favour, 2 against and 16 abstentions. The motion is therefore carried.
Thank you. We now move to the third motion. Members, can I ask Councillor Manning to move and speak to his motion as set out on pages 5 and 6. Councillor Manning.
Thank you, Chair. That all got a bit grumpy, didn't it? Hopefully we can go back to the sort of more consensual tone with this motion. There's two substantial points to this that I just want to briefly talk about, especially for the sake of people who are not aware of some of the background. The first one being the government's proposed planning bill and the impact that may have on both the current archaeological services that we have in the county and some future ones. And secondly, what the nature of those future services. So the first point, this is the planning bill. There is a suggestion in the planning bill, essentially, that the government are consulting on giving developers slightly more chance to challenge preconditions. And both I and the officers feel that this is potentially dangerous. This is not one of those things where we're saying the government's doing some horrible evil thing. It's just asking for an unequivocal clarification, because there have been some discrepancies between the text of the bill and ministerial statements. So what we're asking for is a very clear statement that the County Council, in conjunction with the District Councils as planning authorities, can impose the conditions that we believe are necessary to protect the archaeological record. And I'm hoping that will get broad support across the Chamber. The second point that came out of this, and actually this is one of those wonderful things I find that occasionally happens when you're a councillor, where you have a meeting about one thing and a discussion with an officer that then begets a sort of related but other topic, which is I asked the officers why we were in the situation we were in, given that Cambridge is such a high growth area, we have so many planning applications, why do we not have a more centralised archaeological service? Why is a lot of the actual work done by private companies? And the answer that came back was essentially it was a result of decisions made X number of years ago, and it's now going to be far too difficult to bring that all back in-house because it's all dispersed and it all works quite well. However, one of the officers I was talking to then said, well, actually, there was a business case dating back to about 2008, 2009 that was looking at an antiquities service. Now, I personally didn't know the difference between antiquities and archaeology, not being an expert. And antiquities, for all those who don't know, is essentially in simple terms that I understand, is the job of getting the stuff out of the ground in a state that's intact that allows you to give it to archaeologists to classify and work on, display in a museum and understand the background to. And essentially antiquities is the job of antiquities is material science, essentially. You're trying to work out, you don't need to know what a thing is, you just need to know what it's made of in order to get it out safely. And that business case was, for various reasons, took a back burner, and is now, because of this conversation with officers and a few meetings I've had with them, has now become resurrected. And just to be clear, this is potentially going to be a revenue-generating service for this council, and hopefully something that we can use to bring money in and work on it and be a good thing. So, you know, Cambridgeshire has, you know, a tremendous amount of archaeology. It just really is the best archaeology, and this is celebrating work of officers in a way and celebrating the international reach of some of the work we've done, particularly but not solely on the Musk Farm project. And just to give you some idea of how far that reached, I was speaking to the head of the archaeological unit at Cambridge University, who just told me he'd come back from Japan, where he had a fully paid lecture trip. I'm not quite sure whether the university got that, not one of our officers, but he had a fully paid lecture trip to go out there and talk to the Japanese government about the Musk Farm work. So we can be really proud, tremendously proud of what the officers have achieved there, actually. And hopefully you'll all be able to get behind this motion and celebrate that work and obviously bring out this opportunity to make us more money. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Manning. Do you have a seconder? Councillor Reeve, do you wish to speak now or to... Sorry? Okay, members, it's open for debate. Do I have an amendment, perhaps? That's good. Councillor Harford, you're not proposing an amendment, are you? Oh, very good. Councillor Harford, please.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I'm rather surprised by this motion, and I feel it's somewhat a waste of members' time to be debating it, and certainly a waste of our Chief Executive's time to be asked to write to the government on this. It clearly says that pre-commencement planning conditions are only imposed by local planning authorities where they are absolutely necessary. And that is currently what local planning authorities do. There are statutory tests in place which require conditions to be justifiable, and planning authorities only impose those conditions when they are required and justifiable. In my experience on planning committees at the District Council, in the 7 years that I've been on those planning committees, I have only ever known a pre-commencement condition for archaeology to be requested once. That was quite recently. We have to get the balance right here. The planning environment is changing. Those of you who are not conversant with the planning process will perhaps not realise that the most important thing for us in this region is, when we give planning permissions, to have those permissions enacted. Some of the permissions that we give on some of the bigger sites actually have conditions numbering in the hundreds on them. This cannot be right. We have to learn to balance the need to protect things like archaeology against the need to build. We have a desperate need to build in this region, and I really feel that it's a shame that people do not understand that conditions will only be applied when they are absolutely necessary. There is an opportunity for anybody who feels really strongly about this to respond to the consultation, as I have done, and as I am assuming all the local planning authorities who are the experts in this will also do.
Thank you, Councillor Harford. Councillor Schumann.
Thank you, Chairman. Again, I will be brief, but just to support Councillor Harford's comments about the need to build, and that's what the emerging bill is addressing, this absolute need, which I'm sure we all agree with, this country needs to build houses because of the shortfall that we're facing. I can't see the harm in the motion. The motion is very much a motion which makes sense. Of course, we need to impose conditions where necessary. However, I would err on the side of caution from my particularly colleagues opposite when looking at archaeology and the costs that archaeology can sometimes have on a development. As I know anecdotal evidence of archaeology costs which then impact on the viability of a site, and therefore one of the first things to reduce is affordable housing. And I'm sure my colleagues wouldn't be in favour of reducing affordable housing on any given site and would do everything to reduce the risk of that reduction in affordable element.
Thank you. Councillor Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I first read this, I picked out a couple of phrases. The first really was about the Must Farm. Absolutely right. It is internationally recognised. I've been there on several occasions. I've done interviews there as well. It is a superb, and if members have not been, I would encourage you to go, because actually it is worthy of a visit. So I understand that. Then I looked to the next one, and I looked the word draft. And it still is in draft, the plan. So, as we all know, things go through Parliament and they get amended. Then I turned over, and it's fair to say I was similar to Councillor Schumann. There's nothing fundamentally wrong, okay? It's fair to say I didn't like some of the words, okay? And had I had the opportunity, I could have put an amendment to it, but I think that will also waste Council's time by putting another amendment that perhaps fundamentally we're trying to achieve, that I think Councillor Manning is trying to achieve. So it's about the what I call, you know, the last thing, which is resolving writing to the Chief Executive and writing to the Prime Minister, the planning, and ask for unequivocal, etc., etc. I didn't warm to those words at all, okay, and did contemplate putting an amendment, but fundamentally, as I think has already been said, fundamentally, it's not something to vote against. Okay, I would have perhaps phrased things in certainly in a different way, but happy will happily go with it, as they say. Okay, but and there was a but really. It depends what the chief executive writes, I think.
Thank you, Councillor Bates. Councillor Reeve, you reserved your right to speak. Now is the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairman. I will be quick because there seems to be a consensus in the room. What this, I will point out, though, what this isn't about is the huge objection I personally have to the Planning and Infrastructure Bill 2016. I think it has all sorts of problems within it. But this motion isn't about that at all. And I think that's highlighted in the second to last paragraph that where I've seen a compromise from my point of acknowledging housing growth is wanted in this area. And I think the majority in this room disagree with my personal position on that, to fight for the environment and local communities. But this definitely isn't about that. This is about a risk that the precautionary principle in archaeology could be lost, that heritage assets and archaeological integrity could be wiped away, and that the requirement of an absolute necessity within permission in principle, which is what this bill is all about, providing permission in principle, and in effect I would argue strongly in a different debate bypassing some of the local democracy in planning, could create a situation that isn't wanted by anyone, and I don't think is even wanted by those who drafted the bill, where permissions in principle could ride roughshod over what we all want, which I think is protection of our historical assets, protection of our environment. I'm very glad that there seems to be a consensus around the room in favour of this bill, of this motion, and very pleased to see it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Reeve. And finally, Councillor Manning.
Just very briefly, Chair, just to say on Councillor Harford's point, just the slight subtlety here is it allows for the challenge of pre-commencement conditions, not general conditions. And to Councillor Schumann and Councillor Bates, I take your points. Ironically, the reason the first of the two paragraphs under therefore I put in was to try and come towards a little bit and take the points about the wording. And I suppose the final point I just wanted to make was, aside from the actual motion, there's quite a nice story of where this came from, which is, I think, regardless of the detail of this specific motion, this came from a personal friend who happened to have just completed a PhD in archaeology, was aware of concern in the industry about this, and brought it to me. I went to the officers. So I suppose I'm just trying to say that it's a nice advert for direct democracy. You know, an individual comes to a councillor, takes it to the council, we seem to have a general consensus about this, we're going to take it to a minister, and hopefully that will improve legislation, hopefully it will bring in some money to this council, which could of course save some people's lives. And that's all lovely and jolly, isn't it? Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Manning. We have now heard all the speakers. I haven't heard any great dissent. Would you wish a vote or to accept by acclamation? Fine. Thank you very much, members. We'll move on, in which case, to the fourth motion, which is Councillor Netzinger. Can I ask Councillor Netzinger to move and speak to her motion as set out on page 6?
I'd like to withdraw my motion and not move it. Thank you.
Members, are you happy to have this withdrawn?
Yes.
Thank you very much. We now move on to the fifth motion submitted by Councillor Downes. Can I ask Councillor Downes to move and speak to his motion as set out on pages 6 and 7? Councillor Downes.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I would like to propose this motion. Are you going to ask for a seconder?
Once you've proposed, it says here, Councillor Downes to move and speak to the motion, and then it says, okay. Councillor X to second.
Right, very good, thank you.
To point of order, Chairman, there is no Councillor X.
Well, you say that, Councillor Count, but there is certainly one member masquerading as Basil Fawlty, according to the Councillor Downes.
Thank you very much. The difficulty in talking about schools and grammar schools and so on is that everybody wants to extrapolate policies from their own personal experiences. So when you're talking about it, you'll hear people who will say, well, I went to a grammar school and it did me a lot of good, or I went to grammar school and I didn't enjoy it very much, or people will say, I failed 11 plus, but look at me now. I triumphed in spite of the secondary model and so on. So it is very easy to extrapolate, to generalise from personal things. And we're told that Theresa May went to a grammar school and she's Prime Minister, so that's fantastic. On the contrary, Boris Johnson, David Cameron and George Osborne went to public schools, and that has a message about public schools. So what I want to urge you, not, as it were, to tell us about your personal experiences to justify the policy issue. I want instead to just refer briefly to evidence. Now, this evidence has been written by experts, and I do have, of course, to apologise for referring to experts, because expertise has come in for rather critical non-acclaim in recent weeks. But I think we do turn to the experts and look at what it is they are saying about whether or not having a grammar school system reduces the gap between high and low attainers. Does it produce social mobility? And I'm afraid, well, not afraid, I'm quite clear that the answer to that question is no, that having a grammar school system does not improve standards for everybody. It's a close call, but it doesn't significantly improve, and we have still 163 grammar schools, as you know, and Buckinghamshire, which has a totally selective system, has got one of the worst gaps between high and low attainers. We must remember, of course, that grammar schools were set up to teach grammar. They were vocational schools for lawyers and for future clerics. And they needed grammar because they were doing Latin. And then the grammar school evolved over many, many years and was finally, as it were, enshrined in the 1944 Act. And then in the 1960s, there was a change of view, and Margaret Thatcher, among many others, did away with the grammar school as a compulsory way of doing things. Now, I want to put it to you that the present return of this topic is a major distraction from the real issues that are challenging the education system. There are far, far more important things to talk about than the grammar schools. And I want, isn't to emphasise that this must be, we must put all the pressure we can on government to shelve this idea and to get back to the important things, which are teacher provision, the gaps between the wealthiest and the poorest, and the funding mechanisms. Those are the important things. So I want to ask you to support this on the basis that the research evidence is clear that grammar schools do not improve social mobility. International evidence is equally clear. The overall performance of a school system is not better if it has a greater proportion of academically selective schools. And I just want to conclude, and I'll give you, anybody who wants the actual reference to the research, I'm very happy to provide that. I just want to conclude with a very short statement, which I hope you will all support. We find no evidence to suggest that overall educational standards in England would be improved by creating additional grammar schools. And then this is the important paragraph in this research. In any case, any government wishing to significantly raise social mobility needs to do much more to raise attainment in the early years of life and in primary schools. Selecting at age 11 is unlikely to help many poor children to attain higher grades and to succeed in life. So it's in that spirit that I'm putting this motion before you, and I hope you will support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Downes. Do you have a seconder? Councillor Whitehead. Councillor Whitehead.
Yes, I reserve my rights.
Thank you. Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Chairman. Whilst I agree totally with point B of Councillor Downes' motion, I'm afraid I can't support the motion in its entirety. I think to do so would be to misunderstand the national proposals that are only proposals at this stage. It's not only about a greater proportion of academically selective schools, as Councillor Downes suggests. Your motion, Councillor Downes' motion, selects only one part of the proposals, which really do need to be considered as a whole. And as a whole, the proposals go a long way to actually satisfying Part B of Councillor Downes' motion. This is about offering choice so that pupils in all areas have equal opportunity to attend a good school, not just those that can afford to be in the right postcode. East Anglia, in particular, has a lack of choice with few grammar schools, none of which are in Cambridgeshire. We already have selection, in fact, in our academies in a small-scale way, with schools that have specialist subjects being allowed to give priority in admissions to pupils that show an aptitude to those subjects. These proposals make provision for pupils to join selective schools aged 11, 14 and 16, so this is not all about selection at 11, and that does accommodate late developers. There's already a move by grammar schools themselves under the recent changes of rules to have selection criteria that ensures pupils from poorer backgrounds have the chance to attend in good numbers. And in fact, in one case, a school is ensuring that 25% of the intake are pupils from more deprived backgrounds, either in receipt of free school meals or on the pupil premium. That's against a national average of 14% of pupils in that position. So an over-intake of percentage terms. So the proposals taken in the round require new selective schools to take a proportion of pupils from disadvantaged backgrounds, to establish a high-quality, non-selective free school, to set up or sponsor a primary feeder school in a deprived area, or to sponsor an underperforming academy. And that's the bit that Councillor Downes' motion leaves out. This is about, so the proposals taken holistically are about driving standards up for everyone, about being ambitious for everyone, about making sure that all pupils have access to a good school place. It's about recognising what's good about selective schools and spreading that across the system, and therefore I'm afraid I can't be supporting Councillor Downes' motion.
Councillor Hipkin.
I will be supporting the motion, but with so many misgivings. And my misgivings arise from my own close association with a good deal of the research that has been done into questions of comprehensive schooling and their impact upon social mobility. First of all, I think we've got to realise that within the so-called comprehensive system, there is a huge hierarchy, gradational hierarchy, in schools which are perceived to be good schools and not such good schools, and some downright bad schools. The idea that if you go to a comprehensive, somehow you're taking part in a great British experiment at equalisation is nonsense. Within this city of Cambridge, we have a comprehensive school which many, many responsible parents would probably do their hardest to keep their children out of. We have got one comprehensive school, or two even, where middle class aspirational parents would be very happy to see their children go. So within this equal system, there is great inequality. And I also do not think that the comprehensive system of itself is going to do much, if anything, about social mobility. Frankly, the degree of social mobility in a society is a function of economic opportunity. If the jobs are there, if the salaries are there, then people who would, in normal conditions, remain pretty low down on the social scale will, as a result of the economic growth and the growth in opportunities, aspire to positions and gain salaries that give them access to a middle-class existence. That is how we guarantee social mobility. The other thing to remember is that there is a very, very close association between academic selection and social selection. That is to say, that if you have a system whereby children are chosen for their academic potential, I'm afraid it is one of the awful truisms about our class system, that the chief beneficiaries of that selection system, whether it happens in a grammar school system or in a comprehensive school that streams, middle class kids will arrive in the top streams or in the grammar schools, and many impoverished working class people will find themselves at the other end. So I think the idea that somehow academic selection on a purely ability talent basis will somehow relieve us of these problems is wishful thinking. And finally, I think the notion that everything would be all right if only we got the kids early enough. The Americans tried this with a monumental experiment called the Head Start experiment, where huge sums of money were spent in the 50s and 60s on rescuing children from impoverished and poor backgrounds and giving them a head start. And what was the result of that? Pretty well zero. And the Americans had to reluctantly admit that that money had not exactly been misspent, but all it had been proven to show was that, I'm afraid, these social distinctions, social differences, social inequalities run so deep that the educational system is pretty impotent to do much about them.
Thank you. Councillor Brown.
Thank you, Chairman. I agree with Councillor Bailey, and actually with much of what Councillor Hipkin just said, but it was actually for what I agreed with over what Councillor Hipkin said, which is why I can't support this motion. I think the bit that hasn't really been mentioned yet is the current system, from what I see, does not seem to be doing what we want for all our children. I personally hold a view that there should be a wide range of educational establishments taking things from different angles, whether that be vocational, whether it be the straight academic, and this, by a grammar school system, will just play a small part in that. What we're doing at present, we still, in this county in particular, we still have far too big a gap. I agree entirely with Section B of Councillor Downes' motion, and I hope nobody will read the words in that we're telling people what to do. We actually are encouraging them, as opposed to earlier on, the debate earlier on. But personally, I can't agree with it, because it's got to be part of the bigger picture. And whilst Councillor Downes did say, please don't bring your own personal experiences into it, I'm going to, because I also feel that I would be betraying my parents and the school, the teachers at the grammar school that I went to, for all the opportunities they gave me. And believe you me, when you come from as the son of a very small flower grower who we made our living from selling flowers on the local street market, I do not consider that I came from a privileged background. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Now, nearly every member has indicated they wish to speak. So the next is Councillor Scutt, and I am going to close the list as she sits down. Councillor Scutt.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the other side, it was said... Oh, yes. That's a consequence of a very good education. Every child, it was said on the other side, should have a chance to attend a good school, and every child from a disadvantaged background has a right to a good school. I agree with both those statements. However, I would say every single child has a chance to attend a good school, and every single child from a disadvantaged background has a right to a good school. That does not mean delivering up grammar schools. That does not provide a good school for every child, the chance for every child to have a good school, and the chance for every child from a disadvantaged background to go to a good school. What one recognises, it doesn't matter whether you're in this country, in Canada, in the United States, in Australia, in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Whenever a Conservative government comes in, one of the first steps that it takes is to intervene in the education system, and it intervenes in the education system to support that part of the education system that serves its own. And it intervenes in the education system to downgrade or derogate from the education system that serves everybody else. One of the judges of the House of Lords said in 1873, knowledge is power, and that is what Conservatives governments recognise, and that's why they intervene in the education system, because what Conservatives government recognise is that education does change power differentials, and that ultimately this change could render class irrelevant, or at least lessen the stranglehold that class has on all this country's institutions. The support of grammar schools and the introduction of grammar schools is divisive. It undercuts the more egalitarian education system to which we all should strive, so that there is a good education system that serves every single child and that serves every disadvantaged child. The motion that Councillor Downes has put forward is an excellent one, and there is no doubt that the policy that the current Prime Minister seeks to introduce or reintroduce into this country is one that will not serve every child, is one that will not serve every disadvantaged child. It will deny children a right to a decent education, and it will deny disadvantaged children a right to a proper education. The 11 plus system does not actually find the children who are the best children. It finds the children who are actually able to do well in the 11 plus examination, and that is not finding children who are entitled to have a decent education, and that is every single child.
Thank you, Councillor Scott. Councillor Reeve, follow that.
Thank you, Chairman. One of the problems with this debate is about grammar schools is it's almost always unlocks a debate about the comprehensive system of the 1970s, not about modern grammar schools and a modern education system. I would urge Councillor Downes, although I suspect he won't, to remove paragraph A from this motion, because I think he will get consensus across the chamber if he removes that ideological statement from within this motion. However, I suspect that ideology is the point of his argument. To argue about grammar schools versus 1970s style comprehensive schools, or even to bring it up to date, a restrictive grammar school system where there is limited numbers and huge competition for places, is not the debate we should be having. The debate we should be having today is looking at the modern education system with a mixed economy of education. I'm one of those parents that Councillor Hipkin referred to who hasn't put my children first. I've insisted that they go to the local school no matter what the standards, no matter what the competition to get in elsewhere. But I see my friends and peers who move house, who use all of their resources, who pay for private education, because there is a selective system in this country, and it's one that disgusts me, because it's a selective system based entirely on your economics. If you can afford to get into the best schools in your area, the best schools in this country, you can get into them, no matter what your ability, no matter what your situation, other than money. And I want to break that cycle, that current position in this country, and I believe actually this Conservative Prime Minister, albeit with what I would argue is a UKIP policy, has that agenda. We're not in the 1970s where you have a pass-fail system of either you have access to the best schools in the country or you are forced into the worst. That's not the modern education system. Look at colleges such as University College in Peterborough, which picks up kids 2 years before, when it opens, will pick up kids 2 years before their GCSEs to take them through a specialist education process. That's not a grammar school, it's a school that's specialising. The entire academies programme, when it works, or if it ever works properly, will be about finding specialists, making schools fit the children's aspirations and desires and abilities in terms of the future they want to go through. To suggest that there's an academic approach to this, that you are either in the best schools or the worst, is an outdated argument. There are brilliant schools that specialise in particular topics. All we're suggesting, or all I would suggest, is that grammar schools should be a welcomed part of that mix, broadening the horizon so that those who are academically gifted or want to go through an academic process, no matter what their means and economic ability, have access to those schools. But I tell you now, there'll be a lot of children who don't want to go to grammar schools because they want to become architects, they want to become engineers, they want to go to the likes of Peterborough College that has relationships with employers because it specialises in education for a work environment going forward. We're not in the 1970s anymore, and the old argument of the haves and have-nots in education shouldn't and mustn't become the determining factor in this, because it undermines a modern education system that's built around individual children and individual needs and aspirations, rather than an old system that's built on an outdated concept of class.
Councillor Hunt.
Thank you, Chair. I took notice of Councillor Down's comments about we all being either having an opinion because we did go to grammar school or we did go to comprehensive. Well, I didn't go to either, and as a result of my granddad dying, a horse called Never Say Die in Leicester Piggott, I was able to enjoy an education at another place. So I can actually look at this question with an unbiased point of view. And the two things that quite simply come to mind is, one, at the moment, the county councils are forbidden to open a grammar school. If this change, which I believe at the moment is only a green paper, if it goes through, it will allow the county councils to make their choice as to what sort of education they want. And surely devolution is exactly what we want, and the choice is exactly what we want. And there's something else that, while I was sitting here listening, I'm thinking, oh, I'm in a political environment. I'm in an environment where Lib Dems want to give equality to women and the Labour Party want to give equality to women, and they don't like the grammar school. The Conservative Party has put the second woman as Prime Minister. No other party has. The Conservatives have got a grammar school, and if there is anyone who says the top positions are open to anybody through the grammar school situation, look at the Prime Minister. Look at the women we are promoting. Thank you.
Councillor Bullen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow that, as they say, yes.
Well, you'll notice I didn't, in fact, say that this time round.
Oh, sorry. I can't support this motion. And I agree with the words of many members here. Paragraph A just is a non-starter, in my view. To use Councillor Down's own words, he says, selection at 11 does not raise academic standards for the majority of children. I agree entirely with that. But what about the minority of children who are academically gifted? At the moment, they're forced through a comprehensive scheme where they're held back with people less able than themselves. And it doesn't matter from where you come. I passed the 11 plus. I didn't go to grammar school. There weren't enough places. But to stop those children who are academically better than the rest from getting the education they deserve is wrong. I think we do have to stream. To say that we shouldn't allow children to have a challenge, that it's not good for them to be beaten or for someone else to do better, in my opinion, doesn't equip them for life in any way, shape or form. Life is a challenge. And the more challenges we give our children, the more competition they have, the more contests they have to win, then in my opinion as adults, the better they will be. And the 11 plus does that. It gives something to aim for. And those who are better academically will go to grammar schools. And they will do well academically. And so they should. Because they are the leaders of the future. They're the ones that will have the education to lead this country. There are those who are not so academically gifted, but they're gifted in other ways, as Councillor Reeve said, who they should maybe go to technical schools, to technical colleges. They're going to be the builders, the carpenters, the plumbers of the future. But they can't read and write so well as some others, maybe. So, no. Oh,
Members, Councillor Bullen, if you'd like to continue, please. Members.
Thank you, Chairman. I cannot support this. I think we should be screening our children. We should give everybody, and this is the beauty about the 11 plus, regardless of your background, rich or poor, you have a chance. And you have a chance to have the best education available. And therefore, I can't support this as it is. Thank you.
Councillor Manning.
Thank you, Chair. Just a point of clarity, perhaps, for Councillor Bullen, that streaming and grammar schools are two very different things. I actually wanted to pick up a couple of points that Councillor Bailey made. One to agree with her, and one to, I believe, in a hopefully a generous way, this will take point out the flaw in her argument. I'll do the flaw first, which is that she mentioned about the idea of selection at 11 and the motion doesn't mention selection at 14 and 16. I don't think that point correctly. Well, of course, the point why that isn't actually a good thing is that the research evidence shows that if you mix high-achieving children with low-achieving children, what tends to happen is the low-achieving children get brought up, the high-achieving children don't get pulled down. Well, you can shake your head.
Members, can I ask you to address any comments through the chair, firstly?
Sorry, chair,
and secondly,
sorry.
Please can we listen to members in a courteous fashion?
Apologies, Chair. I'm simply quoting research evidence. So what actually happens in the scenario that I think Councillor Bailey was perhaps positing, that if you didn't get in 11, you've got another chance to get in at 14, and then if you don't get in at 14, you've got another chance to get in at 16. What actually happens is that 11, a number of the gifted children are removed from the system, and therefore there are less gifted children mixing with the less able children. So when they get to 14, guess what? They're even further behind. And when they get to 16, the same thing happens again. So they're even further behind at that point, which is part of the reason why selection is bad and why selection is different from streaming, is that it's a cut-off point. And therefore, you start to lose out from the point you're cut off. But the point I did agree with her is that I could quite exactly quote it, but I think she said that she thought that all schools should be good schools. Well, actually, yes, I agree with that. But the way you make all schools good schools is not by fiddling around with the system. It's actually by investing in the system and raising the profile of the profession within society and understanding that actually that's the important thing. Schools need to be good schools, not designed in different ways. And I shall simply finish by, it wouldn't be a council meeting if I didn't respond to a point that Councillor Scott had made. I think she criticised a number of Conservative governments across various countries for coming into power and then messing around with the education system. Perhaps she could remind me who brought in academies originally and which government and which colour that was.
Thank you, Councillor Manning. Councillor Palmer.
I said I wasn't going to speak on this motion, and I've decided actually that I won't. And everything's been said, I think, by Councillor Reeve, which is unusual that Councillor Reeve and I would agree, but I do agree fully with Councillor Reeve. I don't think the Council needs to hear me bleat on again about education anymore. So thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Dupre.
Thank you, Chair. Like Councillor Brown and perhaps one or two others, I will, I'm afraid, briefly ignore Councillor Down's plea for us not to delve into anecdotage, but I'm going to start by pointing out that, like Councillor Brown, I'm very grateful for the grammar school education that I received. However, though it wasn't an issue of choice. I grew up in an island that was about 10 miles by 5. There were no comprehensive schools. It was all we had. And what I did see, therefore, I was the one that was scooped out of the council flat into the grammar school, and was very fortunate. But I saw what it did to the morale of my siblings who were not so fortunate and who had to struggle to reach their places at university and make their way through the academic system because of the knockback that they got at 11 and the division that caused. Now, it's been said that we are not in the 1970s anymore with regards to comprehensive. We are, however, not in the 1970s either with regards to the way grammar schools used to operate in the 1970s. And what we have now is a system whereby, actually, the children of the very affluent will always do well. They will do well under a comprehensive system because their parents can afford to move them into the postcode areas where the good schools are. And it's been correctly pointed out that not all comprehensive schools are equally good by a long way. And they will do very well too under a selective system, because a selective system these days does not give every child an equal chance. It doesn't give the children of the poor the same chance of a grammar school education as the children of the affluent, because the affluent spend the fortune that they don't have to spend moving house into the nice postcode area on private tutors. And the children of the affluent in a grammar school system are tutored to within an inch of their lives in order to get into the grammar school. It's not a system of choice. It's not a choice for the parents. It's a selective system is the school choosing the child, not the parents choosing the school, and we must not forget that. What that means, therefore, is given that the children of the affluent will always do well under whatever system we have, there is a shed load of work to be done on bringing up the standards in the comprehensive schools in our county that are not doing so well up to the level of the very best. And that is a duty and a responsibility that where we can, these days, due to the fragmentation of the education system with the introduction of academies under Labour, the system is much more fragmented than it was, but where we can, we should be using that influence to assist the children of the in the less well-off schools and bring up those standards as far as we can. Finally, I really must comment on Councillor Reeves' request that we remove Section A, or that we don't support Section A as being ideological. In fact, what that section is pointing to evidence, and it is a sad reflection on what has happened in recent months, that the one piece of this motion which is actually talking about the evidence that exists is referred to as being ideological.
Thank you. Councillor Netzinger.
Thank you. There has been significant evidence for many years that the biggest issue facing education in the UK is the large number of children who are failed by our system. The UK has some of the best universities in the world, and our A-level system is widely admired. The problem we need to tackle is not more support for the most able, but better support for those pupils who struggle. We should be spending time and effort on improving assessment and support for children with special educational needs, on supporting children who do not have supporting families, and supporting schools which are working in challenging areas. Introducing grammar schools will make it far harder for all of these groups, for pupils with special needs or for teachers teaching in the secondary moderns which are left. Anna Bailey talks about the whole package of measures and offering choice, but the point about grammar schools is that they offer a choice to a very small number of children, children who evidence shows come very substantially from the better-off middle-class families who can afford the coaching to get them in, and reduce educational opportunities and the quality of provision for the vast majority. Before moving to Cambridgeshire, I lived in Gloucester, a city with four grammar schools. The impact of those grammar schools on the surrounding schools was devastating. It was not only that few parents who cared about education were willing to contemplate sending their children to the city's secondary moderns. It was also the case that those schools found it incredibly difficult to recruit and retain teachers. The teachers who did attend those schools were failed by the education system in a way that happens very rarely here in Cambridgeshire. Teaching children who know from age 11 that they have been branded unacademic and failures is incredibly difficult. Teaching teenagers is hard enough without this social segregation. Peter Reeves' suggestion that grammar schools are just like other specialist schools falls down because selection on academic criteria has a much bigger knock-on effect on surrounding schools than any specialism on PE or music or other specialist areas. Councillor Bullen suggests that a comprehensive system holds children back. I profoundly disagree, having been educated at a very ordinary comprehensive and seen my children go through their comprehensives. I was certainly challenged, as they have been, at their comprehensive schools.
Good comprehensive education has been demonstrated time and again to be the best system for all children. It is demonstrated by national and international research, and the evidence is obvious from the pattern of educational achievement across the country. We should be 100% focused on making sure that every school is a good school, and grammar schools make that much more difficult.
Thank you. Councillor Shooter.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, Councillor Down said not to use sort of evidence of the past or whatever, but I must bring that into my argument, for I'm sadly not going to support this motion. I failed the 11 plus. My local grammar school was Weekly Grammar School, which, as some of you may know, is the grammar school that Theresa May went to. So actually, if I'd passed it, I probably would have been at school with our current Prime Minister. I wonder what would have happened then. Anyway. Who knows?
Members. Members.
Anyway, I failed. But that's not actually part of my argument at all. I have been very privileged over the last few years to be a governor of a fantastic school in Cambridgeshire. That school is now an academy. I've been there right through the transition to that. And what I passionately believe in is that we should have an open mind to anything new that comes forward. I really see this. I wish they wouldn't use the word grammar school, actually. It's a new choice. It's a new choice for people, and I would like to see the detail of it before I decide how I'm going to go on this. And we don't yet have the detail. I believe that Theresa May is honest, and I believe that she genuinely wants to do something to help social mobility. What I've seen from my time as a governor in a school is that one of the great things about our education in Cambridgeshire is that many of our schools value every single child. Every single child, in my belief, has talent. It's a question of finding that talent. Sadly, what I've also seen is that some children are not sadly supported by their parents in the way that I would have thought would be completely natural, and I would hope I would always do for my children and was done for me. And it's up to the school then to intervene and to find ways of giving those children support. And sometimes that needs a wide variety of types of schools. I think gradually we are starting to develop that wide range of schools. I was very lucky. I was privately educated. If I hadn't been privately educated, I really dread to think what would have happened to me in the 70s. Because being dyslexic and not being able to read and write, I was at a huge disadvantage. But there was that choice, and I was able to make that choice. I fully appreciate that many families can't make that choice. What I would like to see this government and successive governments do is enable the widest possible choice for all types of children to be out there. I'm not an educational expert. Councillor Downs knows far more about this than I do. But I just want to see all children have choice, because I believe every single child has talent, and that talent needs to be helped and nurtured by the type of school that's there, and that needs a wide variety of schools. So I would like to give this new legislation a chance to come forward, a chance to develop, and therefore I will not support this motion.
Councillor Gillick.
It is true what Councillor Scutt said about the injustice of grammar school education. They were very, very successful in a very specific sort of way. And at the same time, the secondary moderns, when they first came about, just after 1944, they were good because they trained what I call the body genius. They did proper woodwork, proper cookery, proper all sorts of things. Even some of them did building. But that was all washed away under Margaret Thatcher in the 1974-75. That all changed. All those hand skills, that learning to make, was destroyed, taken away from the schools, and it became all academic in the sense. And the boys that I was teaching at that time, and the boys had come from farming backgrounds. They were excellent young men and excellent young women too. It was a mixed school. But they were not given the actual skills that they required, because everything had become academic. like a grammar school. And that's one of the failings with the comprehensive school. This had just become a comprehensive school, I was in. They watched all those things taken away from them. And nowadays, to try and introduce grammar schools have got a very long history, going back to Queen Elizabeth I and beyond, much earlier than that. And to try to set up that regime, as it was in the 50s, 60s and 70s, and still is in some parts of the country, you can't invent that, because the people who come to teach know nothing about that tradition. They don't have that grammar school background. I didn't have it either. But what must be done is the quality of the grammar school must be taken into the academies or the comprehensives, so that those who are physical, simple physical people like me, work with their hands, work with their physical know-how, which comes sort of naturally. That should be upgraded in the state schools, whatever they are, whether academies or comprehensives. They should in fact be encouraged. And just to try and put like they have done in the past, just put a label on the school and say, that's what it is, that isn't good enough. They need a range of things that the different types, the different capacities of people can in fact latch onto, and it is not there in so many of the comprehensives at the moment. So I will in fact support Councillor Downs on this, because I think there needs to be an equality, and names don't change it, and uniforms don't change it, and segregation of the classes and the types is wicked.
Thank you. Councillor Whitehead, you reserved your right to speak. Now is the moment.
Thank you very much, Chair. I find it difficult to know quite where to start. Before I became a county councillor, I was, as many people know, a lecturer in the University of Cambridge. I was an educational psychologist in the Faculty of Education. And one of the topics that I discussed was the politics of intelligence testing. And intelligence testing is at the basis, of course, of the 11+. So I will not, you'll be pleased to know, deliver my lecture. But I would like to just draw out one or two points. First of all, as Peter Downs said, this is a very emotive issue. Everybody has an experience of their secondary school, good, bad, indifferent, wonderful. And many of us are very grateful to the schools that we went to. And therefore, it becomes a topic of great passion, and I accept that. But I have to say that selection, the process of selecting children to go to different types of schools, is one of the most heavily researched topics in the whole of education and psychology. The references are vast, and therefore, of course, I cannot go through them all. But one of the things I will say, out of all that research, the thing that became clear, and in particular the British Psychological Society, who was asked by the government to look at the effect of selection on children, because, of course, selection means for many more rejection, looked at that. And the conclusion of that study, and indeed the conclusion of all the studies that looked at the influence of grammar schools, at the process of selection, of segregating pupils into different schools, came to the same conclusion. This is not in the interests of pupils. It does not help the process of achievement. And indeed, one of the things that came out quite clearly is that grammar schools failed many children. You may have been successful grammar school pupils, but in fact, research showed, particularly by Colin Lacey, that although many more working-class boys made it into grammar schools, they didn't do research on girls, they did not thrive there, partly because of teacher expectation, who didn't think that they were children who should be in a grammar school, and partly because they lacked the support from their parents to be able to help them through that system. Many of them left before they took any qualifications at 16, because you could leave at 15, and subsequently left at 16 with no qualifications. One forgets about the pupils that grammar schools failed, and there were a lot of them. But one of the other points I want to make is about equality, because one of the little-known things that's not debated is that grammar schools discriminated against girls. When the 11 plus was first introduced, and at the base of that is an intelligence test, as many of you know, if they had simply taken the top scorers on the test into grammar schools, 60% of them would have been girls. So 60% of the grammar school population would have been girls. That was a great shock to the system of the people who designed these tests, because they had believed for centuries that boys and men are more intelligent than girls and women, and suddenly here they were confronted with a test that contradicted that. So what did they do? Well, what they did was they devised an explanation which said, well, the reason this is happening is that girls mature faster than boys, so at 11 they've reached their intellectual peak, and from then on they are going to be deteriorating in their academic performance. Boys, on the other hand, have not quite got to their peak yet, and therefore they are the ones who will benefit from a grammar school. There is no evidence to support these claims. They are totally false. But nevertheless, on the basis of that, what they did was there were two pass grades, one for girls, one for boys. And therefore you had to score more highly on the 11 plus test as a girl to get a grammar school place than you did if you were a boy. Furthermore, of course, they built more boys' grammar schools than they
did
girls' grammar
chairman.
Schools.
Point of order, Chairman. They were well, I'm enjoying larger. The history lesson. Listen, would it be possible to talk about the motion?
I think Councillor Palmer, I don't think that's point of order, but Councillor Whitehead, I'm sure you're getting to...
Yes, I am getting to the point. They built more boys' grammar schools. They were larger than the girls' grammar schools. So the whole system discriminated against girls. Now, I don't know whether they still do that in Buckinghamshire and Kent. But what it does highlight is that if we are going to move to a grammar school system, as has been proposed, how are we going to deal with this problem? Are we going to have more grammar schools for girls than for boys in order that we don't discriminate against high-ability girls and give lower-ability boys a greater chance? And the reason I brought this up is it just illustrates some of the many complications of trying to have a selective system when it is not really sensible to have one. And it was only when you had comprehensive education that you then began to see that girls outperformed boys at every level of schooling. So there was no freak. And it is because of a comprehensive education that every child gets their chance to develop and to release their potential in the education system. There is no need to go through selection processes. If children are all educated in good schools, then they can all achieve their potential. So selection is simply not going to achieve that aim and is simply a totally retrograde step. And produces all kinds of difficult practical problems for any government that tries to introduce it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And finally, Councillor Downes.
Well, it's going to be difficult to sum up that debate, but I hope you found it interesting, because it actually gave people, it was educational, wasn't it? Yes, actually gave people a chance to expressed their concerns and their point of view, and some very interesting things were said. I would like to have time, I've written them all down, to follow them up and challenge some of them, and some of them I agree with. Now, I quite accept that in order to soften the negativity of the argument at the moment, that Justin Greening is proposing one or two things which are worth examining. But it still will not change my concern about the divisiveness of what she is proposing. But I accept that that is a point. I'd like to talk to Councillor Hipkin about the Head Start project and about the Perry Preschool project as well, because they're contemporaneous in the United States. I suppose the most frightening contribution, I'm afraid, was from Councillor Bullen. I did find that really, that was the one that worried me. I mean, I accept that people got very different points of view, but that was worrying, because I did feel that this separation of the sheep and the goats, those who will lead, those who will triumph, was very, very dangerous. Very dangerous indeed. And I'm sorry, Paul, I just simply cannot accept that at all. Councillor Reeve said quite a lot of interesting things. I'm not sure that architects would want to be necessarily located in secondary modern schools, as you implied, but that's another matter. What I would stress is that what I think we ought to be pursuing as a council is a good school for all our pupils. Yes. A good school for all our pupils. We have a very good tradition in Cambridgeshire of the village colleges and the comprehensive education and funding autonomy and so on. We have a good reputation. If we were to introduce selective schools into Cambridgeshire, the cost even of transporting kids about, on top of everything else, would be phenomenal. It would be demoralising, and I hope that
whatever else happens elsewhere, we as Cambridgeshire can support the concept of good schools, and I accept that comprehensive are not all equally good, I understand that fully, but we, the principle of all our children going to the local school and having their talents identified and developed is one that we should stick to. And that is why I'm proposing this motion predominantly, rather than out of any ideology. I hope you will support it nevertheless. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Downes. We will now move to a vote on this motion. Mrs. Rowe, if you'd be kind enough to talk us through it.
Would members please press the button mark present? Members in favour of the motion, please press the button mark yes. Members against the motion, please press the button mark no. Members wishing to abstain, please press the button marked abstain. I'm now closing the vote. Chairman, the result of the vote is 26 votes in favour, 27 against and 3 abstentions. The motion is therefore lost.
Thank you, Mrs. Rowe. I propose to take questions at 16A on fire authority issues. This will be dealt with in accordance with the guidelines agreed by the Council. Members have a summary in front of them. The report on the fire authority is included on pages 66 to 68, and Councillor Sir Peter Brown, the Chairman of the fire authority, will respond to questions on behalf of the fire authority. Other members on the fire authority are welcome to comment if they wish, and I would advise that they don't. Any questions? Councillor Giles.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I am a member of the fire authority, but I think this gives a very good opportunity. So I will ask a question of the chairman of the fire authority to update the council with regard to the police and crime commissioner's intention to take over the responsibility for the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough fire service as detailed in the police and crime commissioner's bill. And I would also ask him to comment, does he agree with me with the old proverb, if it ain't broke, don't mend it?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Councillor Giles, for your question. I would refer members to item 5 on the report, which does in fact cover the issue about the Police and Crime Commissioner. But I would just like to add a few comments. I think we all know that the PCC has publicly announced his intention to become what we call an early adopter for looking after local fire service matters, but that is subject to a business case which he's preparing. Mr. Abelwhite has said that he will share his business case and consult once the legislation has passed through Parliament, which is expected to be at the turn of the year. Members of the Fire Authority are meeting officially on Thursday, when we had hoped to talk to the Police and Crime Commissioner about his actions. Unfortunately, he can't be present at the meeting, so we have to wait. However, I think it's fair to say that we have had informal discussions, and I think it is it's the unanimous wish of all the members of the Fire Authority to continue the work that we are doing in terms of collaboration with both the police and ambulance services. However, I think we do feel strongly that in the interests of the public and the fire service, integration is not an option we wish to adopt. Both the County Council and Peterborough City Council will have the opportunity to comment on the proposals that the PCC brings forward at the appropriate time, when we hope that you will support our view.
Thank you. Councillor Hunt.
So I'd just like to get for the record say that I totally support Councillor Brown in his opinion that it would be totally unsuitable to merge the police force and the fire service. If we take a lesson from France, you can see that the fire service and the ambulance service work together, and they work very well. I can just imagine the a sort of fire service arriving with the police force on the Oxmoor in Huntingdon and seeing how well they were respected, I think there would be problems. And I think the working of training fire service people to do ambulance or health type jobs is a very good use of resources. But I think that the merging of police and fire service would be fraught with danger.
Thank you for that. I have no other questions, so I'm moving on to the next item, which is 16B, oral questions, dealt with in accordance with the protocol agreed, and you have that on lilac paper. And the first councillor is Councillor Cairns.
Thank you. It's a question to the Leader of the Council and Chair of GPC. I believe he's aware of the question. On the 19th of September, the main county website was unavailable. Was the Leader aware of this, and has he requested an explanation and a review into what happened?
Thank you. Councillor Cairns.
Thank you, Chairman. The first I was aware of it was about an hour ago when I was appraised that there would be this question to me, so I haven't done anything about it.
Councillor Cairns, have you got a follow-up?
I have, but I was saying, was the Leader aware of that, the fact that the website was down? My follow-up question is, given that we are delivering the transformation programme and the digital strategy, and therefore the council is becoming far more reliant on technology, and so are residents in the way that we engage with them, what impact did this have on residents being able to meet deadlines of either consultations or commercial transactions with the council, and was there analysis done of this?
Councillor Cairns.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. The way the initial question was put was I aware of it and what did I do about it? Was simply true. That was my answer. I wasn't aware of it until an hour ago and I didn't do anything about it. However, I am...
Councillor Cairns is answering the question.
I wasn't. I may have been busy on that day. I don't know. But I wasn't aware, so my apologies. But I was made aware of this question in advance, and the second bit of the question I think is much more pertinent, because apparently due to the collapse of the website on that date that I am informed, that certain people that use the website for transactions missed their deadlines, and perhaps there might be other things that you could conceive would miss a deadline, like a consultation response. Therefore, what I believe is the appropriate thing to do, now that I am aware about it, would be to discuss with the appropriate officers what protocol is in place for when a website crashes, and to find out whether that can automatically assist those areas that are cut off by deadlines. I hope that satisfies Councillor Cairns in the realms of an oral answer, but I think that it deserves a little bit more work behind the backgrounds. I shall do that work, and then I shall get back to you to see where this questioning leads me. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Manning.
Thank you, Chair. This is a question to Councillor Bates in his position as our member on the CCTL Executive Board. There's been a statement recently from the Chair of the CCTL Board, Councillor Lewis Herbert, that the Milton Road, as part of the proposals for Milton Road, mature trees will be put back or replaced in some way if the final decision is to cut them down. My understanding of the City Deal terms is that they are very specific about what City Deal money can and can't be spent on, especially talking about transport schemes. Has he or the board received specific confirmation that City Deal money can be spent on mature trees?
Councillor Bates, do you know the answer to this question? Because I'm disinclined to accept it, given that it is asked to you in your capacity as a member of another authority.
Sorry, Chair, at a point of order. Chair, point of order, please. It does say that council representatives on outside bodies.
I'm still not convinced that Councillor Bates is a representative of an outside body. He's a part of an outside body. Well, do you have an answer to the question? Because if you do,
I do have an answer, but bearing in mind maybe what you've just said, may be better that I give a written answer for everybody. I have the answer, and the answer is a simple yes, but I will expand further. Councillor Manning did pre-warn me of the question, so I am aware, I have got the answer. Predominantly the answer is yes, and we can fund it, but I will expand, I think, a little bit on a written answer to the written question.
Thank you. I think we'll leave it at that, Councillor Manning. Next, Councillor Bowden.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a question for the Chairman of the Economy and Environment Committee, or if it's not, perhaps, Chairman, you could advise me which chairman is responsible.
He won't know.
I understand that a revised Fenland local transport strategy is due to be published by the County Council within the next 12 months. And my question is, when will the process of producing this strategy commence, and when will interested local members be able to have an input? Thank you.
Councillor Bates.
I had an answer to the previous question, but not an answer to this question. So, but thank you for the question. I think it's about timing and about engagement. What I think sensible is I don't have prior notice, apart from a couple of hours ago, that I actually get that information and we circulate that information to all interested parties, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Happy? Thank you. Councillor Dr. Scott.
Thank you, Chair. My question is to Councillor Count, and I did actually ask this question earlier today, and I wanted to ask it now in the Chamber. Would Councillor Count please outline precisely and with clarity the financial and resource implications of a mayor being required as a part of the Peterborough-Cambridgeshire Devolved Authority? That is, of course, what salary will the mayor be paid and how will it be pegged? That is, against what standard to measure rises? But in addition to that, what administrative support system will there be and what are the calculations that that will cost? For example, the mayor must surely have an executive assistant. If there's a chief executive officer, that chief executive officer would obviously cost and have an executive system. There must be a support structure for the authority itself. That is, even if the members of the authority are not paid or receive no allowance, which seems somewhat astonishing, there must be administrative backup for that whole authority. So please, what are the financial and resource implications? Because there is surely no suggestion that the mayor will be a one-horse show.
Before I call Councillor Count to answer this, may I draw your attention to part of the summary guidelines which require questions to be capable of being adequately answered within 2 minutes. I think that's very unlikely on the list of questions that you've just put, so I'm just flagging this up so we don't have this again. Councillor Count.
Thank you, Chairman. There are parts of this question that I can answer with some degree of clarity, and some of it I will describe as a work in progress until it gets to a stage where there's agreement in the combined authority area. And having gone through its process, I cannot give an answer because it may well change. The bit that I can give clarity on is where we are at present, in that we have appointed an interim arrangement which goes from now until May of next year. That interim arrangement is made up of existing council officers that are in our existing organisations, but because they are of different values and different significance and different amount of work that they have to put in to get us to the end game, it is primarily for the purpose of recharging across the authorities. I don't have the figures in my mind, we can flesh that out, but it is in the region of £130,000 from now till May, and that includes a part-time chief executive about half a week. It includes a chief financial officer part-time and a monitoring officer part-time. Apart from that, I can't remember. But these are existing officers that are actually spending more time on devolution than you would normally expect on them. So, for example, the chief executive of Fenland is the interim chief executive of the combined authority, and Fenland is reimbursed for the value that he's putting here through the other part partners, so there's no extra cost involved. In terms of moving forward, that is not solidified yet, so it'd be remiss of me to try and paint a picture that is still in a period of flux. As this becomes available, we will float the responses into the meetings. In fact, today at the group leaders meeting, there was a suggestion for how this council can get a full report from myself at every single council meeting, and we've yet to see where that will go with the Constitution and Ethics Committee, but it is a proposal to have a full resource.
Thank you, Councillor Couch. You've had your 2 minutes.
One bit of clarity then. Okay, the one piece of clarity that I do know that is drawn up from the start is members will not receive any additional allowance for this. They are the leaders of the existing authorities, and it is believed that they are remitted sufficiently to do this job as a member of the combined authority. So nobody gets any extra allowance for this.
Thank you, Councillor Count. Councillor Dr. Scutt, as questioner, you have a further minute in which to put one supplementary question or seek clarification.
Thank you. Just a request that we have this in writing, and also confirmation, because as I understand it, the authorities that exist are actually paying for this, so there is money being paid, and it's coming, for example, from this county council. That's my understanding of what you've said. Officers are being paid. They're therefore doing work for this on this project and not on the projects of the county council.
Councillor Kent.
I didn't quite understand where I'd gone wrong in my explanation. So what I'll ask is that we try and lay this out clearly in a written area on that point.
Quite right. Thank you. Councillor Walsh.
On a related theme, Mr. Chair, my question is to you.
Oh, right.
Since you so serenely stand above the skullduggery of the Chamber. And I've consulted both the Chief Executive and the Monitoring Officer to ask, at any stage in the devolution discussions, has there been any indication, either from the Prime Minister or any Secretary of State for Local Government, that a devolution agreement could be possible without a direct elected mayor? Is there any indication that that was their view yesterday, or that they might change their view before we come to the vote in November?
Well, you might wish
to refer to the Chief Executive in answering that question.
Well, I actually think that it's more appropriate that it's a councillor, and it should be Councillor Count.
I can give this chamber, from my recollection, a very accurate portrayal of what was said by the Secretary of State yesterday. However, I think that Councillor Ashley Walsh is looking for somebody without a political leaning for this. So if I try and do my best, and then if it's okay with the Chief Executive, look for her to affirm that I'm either on the right lines or exactly right. So the first point I would make is that the press release yesterday was from Savid Javid. Right? This was released, not interpreted by the local media and read. The press release that came out from the County Council comes from Savid Javid's office, and it reiterates the necessity for this devolution deal to have a mayor. Right? That's in black and white, it's irrefutable. At the meeting yesterday, during his opening speech, unprompted by questions at that point in time, he spoke at some length about why the government wanted a mayor. He talked about when they took on their new portfolio roles as cabinet members, the first thing to do was re-examine the existing policies of their predecessors to see if they still agreed with them. He said the subject of a mayor came up with Theresa May, with a subcommittee of the cabinet examining, and it was a very short conversation that led them to the conclusion they will still require a mayor for significant devolution deals, and ours is one of the most significant in the country. He said, Cornwall has no requirement for a mayor, but Cornwall never got the sums of money or power, anything like that we're talking about here, and if they want anything remotely like this, then there will be an absolute requirement for a directly elected mayor. And the reason behind this all was the government has two very high up ideas on their agenda. One is housing, the second is productivity. They are dismayed that amongst, I cannot remember correctly whether it was G7 or G20 countries, but we are 20 productivity points behind the average. and they say that they're looking at every way of upskilling our workforce and bringing forward productivity and the system that goes behind it. And they said that at this point in time, they do not believe that the fragmented decision making that the combined authority will help with, or the lack of a single point at the top of the chain, is helping that situation, and therefore there will be no break in their link between significant devolution deals and the requirement for a directly elected mayor, which is successful in the G7 or G20 countries.
Thank you, Councillor Cadd.
Can I just look?
I'll do that bit, given that Councillor
Walsh
may put me in such a difficult position. Perhaps the Chief Executive could just nod assent to the correctness of what Councillor Cadd has said. Councillor Walsh.
No, sir.
Thank you. Councillor Kavanagh.
As part of the effort to reduce congestion in Cambridge during term time, when congestion is at its peak, you know, something like 15% of extra traffic at that time, some independent schools provide a minibus service to transport their pupils from park and ride sites. Do you know what? I've forgotten. I've been addressing this to the chair of the Economy and Environment.
He's used to it.
Sorry, Councillor Bates. I was really wanted to get on with this.
Quite right, Councillor Cavanagh.
Right. I think you're getting the gist of what I'm asking. Anyway, yes, a minibus service is provided to transport pupils from park and ride sites directly to school premises, thus making it unnecessary for parents to drive their cars into the city. Which schools provide this service? And how can other schools be encouraged to follow this example of how to make a significant contribution to reducing the congestion in Cambridge?
Councillor Bates.
Thank you. I had a slight advance warning of that.
Oh, we're expecting
okay,
a list.
So we have invested, as you well know, in Chumpington Park and Ride. There has been actually work done there to enable more minibuses to actually enter there to make sure that that reduces the congestion. Regretfully, I can't actually name all the schools as I stand here at the moment, so I will actually ask that we actually gather those. I know they operate well, but which precise schools I don't know, so I'll have to take that away and come back to you. I would perhaps like to suggest that we all know the congestion falls when the schools are in half term, so I perhaps, as you're sitting next to Councillor Whitehead, it's perhaps something that we jointly should take up in trying to encourage perhaps some of our academies and primary schools to actually adopt the same process. I'm sure that would be welcomed by the City Board, both the Assembly and the Executive.
Mm. Councillor Kavanagh, do you have a supplementary?
No.
Thank you. Councillor Reeve?
Thank you, Chairman. My question was very similar to Councillor Walsh's, so I'll waive it.
Really good, thank you. Councillor Jenkins.
Thank you, Chair. This is a question for Councillor Bates. As our representative on an outside body, namely the City Deal Executive Board, may I continue?
It depends what the question is.
Strange. Okay. Councillor Bates. There's considerable unease about the City Deal Phase 1 proposals. This comes from business people who see them as obstructive, from those who commute to work in the city who see them as adding expense with little benefit, and from residents who just see irreversible damage to the public realm. This has been evidenced by protest marches and meetings, petitions, a poll in the Cambridge News, and our MPs calling for a rethink. I would not be surprised if the current consultation does not add further reinforcement to this position. So does Councillor Bates agree with me that, given this broad public concern, it would be appropriate for the City Deal Executive Board to show real leadership and to pause before going ahead and maybe spending £100 million quickly and badly?
Fine, Councillor Bates.
Well, perhaps I should refer it directly to yourself, bearing in mind that you intervened at the last question about the city deal, so I think...
I am very unhappy about taking questions about the city deal. I think it's the appropriate place to do it, as is at the city deal. If the question is about your role as a county councillor at the city deal, that's one thing, but it's not. It's about you as part of the executive board making decisions at the city deal. So I'm very ambivalent about this, and I'm uncomfortable about it, because I think we need further legal thought on this for subsequent meetings, because this is obviously going to continue to be an issue. If you have an answer for it, Councillor Bates, I'm happy to hear it.
No, I don't have, and I have not advanced warning of that question. I know of all the issues. We have finished the consultation, and that's, I think, all I will say at this moment in time.
Thank you. Councillor Jenkins, I'm sorry, if you have a subsequent that you want to...
I was going to make a comment about your
my
ruling there.
I'll come to you, Councillor Scott, in a moment.
Because if I remember right, it is this chamber which approves the position of Councillor Bates on that board. So he is our representative.
Nonetheless, the questions that were asked were about decisions that have been made by a different body, of which Councillor Bates is a part of a decision-making triumvirate. And I'm very uncomfortable, without taking legal advice, you know, which I don't think that the monitoring officer can deliver fully here now, I'm very uncomfortable about the questions on the city deal matters when Councillor Bates is one of the executive decision makers. But
he is our person on that board.
Which is why I wanted to hear the question.
Would you like to hear my follow-up?
Sure.
Okay. Does Councillor Bates further agree with me, just assuming you had agreed with the first one?
I don't think we can assume anything.
That we need to take a more strategic approach to spending city deal money, that we need to learn more from other cities with similar challenges, which have already implemented solutions, that we should take advantage of the wealth of expertise in this city and its universities, and that we should listen to those with particular expertise. That way, we might get the innovative and forward-looking solution which this city needs.
So thank you.
Take them both away. Wait
and
for the ruling.
No doubt the
but I
work
think there
will
are
be
many
done.
People both in this chamber and throughout the city which would be interested in a response to those questions.
Thank you. Councillor Dr. Scott, you wish to raise a point of order. Do you? Thank you. I think just two points I want to add, which is, first of all, perhaps the chairman of the Constitution and Ethics Committee will take this away in conjunction with the monitoring officer and give this some thought, and it may be something that that committee wishes to give some thought to. And secondly, that questions, the leading point about the summary on questions is that they must be relevant to matters for which the council has powers or duties. And I reiterate my kind of concern that the City Deal Board isn't quite that. So, you know, we'll thrash it out, no doubt, at committee, and then I won't be put in this position again, because we will have a definitive statement, which God knows we need. Well, I think I've said my bit now.
You've had your last word.
I have issued my last word, Councillor Jenkins.
If you'd
word.
Have allowed me, I would just
my
say.
My absolute last word.
Because the interesting thing about...
No. Right, Councillor Bullen, please don't make this about the city deal.
Thank you, Chairman. No, I won't. And this subject has been touched on, and all I need is a yes or no answer from the leader, hopefully. And you're correct, Councillor Count, we did discuss this morning. But bearing in mind, I'm of the opinion now that the pendulum has definitely gone on the side of it would appear that this government is going to insist on a directly elected mayor. But before we debate the whole concept of devolution in full council next month, I'd like your assurance that you will endeavour, and I realise it may not possible, to get for us beforehand the cost, and therefore the salary, of the elected mayor, the cost of his or her office, the cost, additional costs, of the combined authority, the additional costs of any overview and scrutiny, and the additional mileage costs, whereby you're saying that members won't get any more allowances, of them attending all of those committees, etc. I believe that we need that financial information to have a proper debate on devolution and to make the right decision.
Councillor Count.
Thank you, Chairman. It is my understanding that the paper that comes to us in November has all of these deals full, details, all of these details fully fleshed out. I would like to ask that a note of the specific questions, there was a list there, be recorded so that we know that when we come up with the answers, all of those are covered. It's never been my intention to hide anything from this authority. We need to go into this deal open with an open mind and understand all of the implications. And I think that, you know, as part of that devolution debate, discussion, members' briefings, etc., there will also be the other side of the coin, hopefully fully fleshed out, how much money will be arriving and what sort of transformation that will make to the area, to balance up the equation to a certain extent. The point about the members' mileage is made. Obviously, if I'm going to a members' meeting or a combined authority meeting, I will be claiming from this council the mileage for it. So there would be a minuscule, shall we say, cost there. But, of course, I understand that that means that I won't be here in this building for that entire day, which I know people are disappointed about because I didn't actually notice a website going down. So, obviously, I'm not here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But I will do my best. And any other questions? You know, as we develop the answers, I am here as your conduit into this proposed new organisation. And if you have these questions, I will do my best to answer them. I'm not hiding anything. Some things aren't ready yet. But when they are ready, it's been my intention, as I revealed at group leaders this morning, is my intention to be the most open person and transparent person the way we've got it. And I must add, Chairman, that the difficult question you had with the city deal and the way that they are asked questions in the future, we may need to consider how I am asked questions in the same way, which I've volunteered to come here. But I think we do need to protect, I'm going off subject here, but we do need to protect people having various bites of the same cherry, shall we say. And if there's a process for answering questions, one place that you're all invited to, and another one, we need to segregate out what I will be doing there for you. And I think that goes the same city deal. But I am at your disposal, is all I can say.
Thank you.
And Councillor Count, would you please add my questions?
Thank you. Thank you. Councillor Bullen, did you have a supplementary?
Not supplementary, Chairman, but if I ever ask the leader for a yes or no answer again, please stop me.
Right, we move on to the last question. Councillor Whitehead.
Thank you, Chairman. My question was to Councillor Maguire, and I did give it in advance, but he's not here. So I assume it would be to the Deputy Chair of that committee. It's about lighting, and it is a question to which I would expect a written answer rather than a verbal one. I'm sure, along with many councillors, we've had complaints from our constituents about the very, very, very dim lighting which is now provided in residential areas, certainly in the city and possibly in other areas too. I was under the impression that the City Council were going to pay to keep the lights on, and that my understanding was that they would be on and not these absolutely mega dim things which make it totally dark. So one I'd like to ask, what is the contribution that the City Council and the parishes are making towards the lighting bill? And secondly, what is the difference in cost between having these incredibly dim lights, which are almost useless, on all night versus having decent lighting to 1 o'clock in the morning and then perhaps having the lights off from 1 in the morning till 6? And I would just like to, I think it would be of interest to all councils to see what are the differences in costs between those two things, and indeed what is the contribution that the city and the parishes are paying towards this dim lighting, which quite frankly would seem to me to be a waste of their money. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Now, who's answering this question? Oh, Councillor Reeve.
Thank you, Chairman. Of course, the lighting is a flexible lighting system, so it can be dimmed up and down, but there is a cost to that, as been alluded in the question, and they can also be switched on and off, as has been alluded to. The details will be provided in a written answer.
Very sensible. Councillor Whitehead, do you have a supplementary?
No, Chair. I just think it might be of interest to all councillors, perhaps, to have that information.
Thank you. 16C, written questions under Council Procedure 9.2. Responses to the two written questions received have been provided and published on the Council's website. So that concludes the business for the on the agenda for today. Thank you, members, for your contributions, and have a safe journey home. Only an hour later than everybody said.